You're listening to Bigologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.bigologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow bigologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
You're listening to Fakeologist Radio. It's 22:40. It's the 20th of the 11th, 2017. You're about to listen to, hopefully, an ounce of salt per day, Del Cuore, John Adams, Not So Freemason, Fill in the Blanks, Silver Bean, Soundwave 40, and Zell. So
I'm not here because
all these guys will alleviate your tensions and let you feel a little bit of the Fakeology jacuzzi soaking up your muscle tension for the next hour or so.
Zell's the Judas scout. He's let us all in here.
It's all going according to plan.
To my plan.
Yeah, maybe Sammy, it is your plan.
They're quiet.
Interesting.
Actually, speaking of you, Soundwave, what is your agenda? Come on, you can tell me.
My NASA contract doesn't allow me to tell you.
I knew you were going to say that. Either way, even as a joke, or if it's true, you'd say that, right?
I'm just joking with you, bro.
Sure you are.
Right.
So this is Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com, the 20th of November, 2017.
It's the 21st here, Del.
Kennedy was allegedly pretended assassinated a day before in Australia as well. You guys had something to do with the dodgy moon landings. And we know all that, man. They always have to include Australia in, you know, the outer.
Well, I think we're the where all the stuff gets tested first.
That would be Israel, no?
No, I think it's us.
It's the prison and the Krim thing. So they just send them all off to somewhere where they say that it's far away in Australia.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's by the way. Continue on the conversation.
You actually believe that story about Australia being, you know, the colony of ex-cons or whatever?
Man, it's like Ireland, man. We're all a bunch of paddies that if the potatoes failed in the morning, we'd be stupid again.
Well, is this believable?
So, what is today's live stream's topic?
I don't know. Let's take it about you. What do you want to get out of Fakeology, sir?
I'm also really keen to know what Soundwave wants out of Fakeologist.
I mean, what answers are you looking for, Soundwave?
Well, for starters, the solar filter would be cool to do experiments with for users.
You don't need us to do that.
No.
We are not going to contribute to your, whatever those things are called, the fundraiser, the crowd fundraiser.
Yeah, I know. But
so what do you? Why are you here, entertaining us?
Well, if you have an experiment that needs a solar filter, then I can do it for you.
But no one's asking you to do that. Is why are you here? What do you want from us?
Well, I just want to listen, and talk.
And I'm so shocked by hearing me say us. That, you know, after being kicked out of this place four times, but I'm still intrigued. So you enjoy listening to the talk?
Yeah.
And do you find it useful to take the information back to whoever it is to patch up the holes in the story?
There is, I do no such thing.
Okay. And are you married with 15 children?
That's, kind of a weird question. Oh, no.
Actually, let's just run with it. I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Well, I'm a guy that's into photography and electronics and old electronics, you know, old computers, old tape, old film, like messing with that kind of stuff. And yeah.
What spurred this interest? How did this come about? What made you interested in this stuff?
It was a few years ago. I don't actually remember. I think just gradually I found several websites and and I made an account at one point on FES. And started to argue with people and talk with people, you know, share ideas and share my stuff. And yeah, I think it's just a lot of fun to talk with each other. And
so you just enjoy the open minds, is that it?
Most of the time, I also just enjoy reading conversations and arguments. Don't really engage in them as much anymore. I mostly just reply to topics about photos and sharing music and doing. I'm right now doing more social stuff than arguing.
But, yeah, I mean that is fair. I mean it's a nice thing to enjoy. But while we have you here, what are your views on things? I mean. Do you have any controversial views? Are you all mainstream? Well, tell us a bit about your views.
I think all my views are pretty mainstream. Oh, maybe not 9/11 as much, because I think it was an inside job, but planes hit as well.
Really? In what way? There's many theories. Which one do you believe the most in?
Well, I think one of the theories is that the United States wanted to get into a war to get money, basically, you know, those weapons and stuff. So
they basically the false flag thing. Then they did it to get into Iraq and take their oil and stuff, right?
Yep.
Interesting. Why aren't you mainstream on this topic?
Because why not? Well, the building, when you look at how the building falls, I think it falls too quickly, like the floors under it are being blown apart by explosives. And
nice. I mean, there might still be hope for you, yeah. Where'd he go? I think they pulled the plug on him.
Who would have pulled the plug on him?
Himself? His payers? I don't know. This is just getting good.
I was getting somewhere. I must say.
In military terms, don't they call that an extraction?
Even if this is not true, it's completely enjoyable. Banter, isn't it?
I mean, I can actually believe him as somewhat of a real person. I mean, he just sounds very, very new.
He put his photograph in today, and, you know, bless him, he looks like a young fella. He's only 18.
He wasn't even dry. He'd come in from the rain, he took a picture, he wasn't even dry. Told us he was wet before the picture. I don't know if that's ringing any alarm bells yet.
Are we allowed to see the picture?
It's in Chill Trolls. Just scroll up.
He's got his own bloody room.
He's got his own room, man.
In his, wisdom.
I'm looking for his
picture. For him instead of throwing him out. He keeps coming back in different names. But
I think that was a stroke of genius by App. I think that was brilliant.
Right. As well, because he keeps coming back. Are you Soundwave? Yeah. You know, he comes in under a different name and then continues his trip, you know. It's like he's a man on a mission, but or a young fella on a mission.
Yeah.
And he's extremely likable.
Hey, I know.
not rude or offensive to anybody. He's not the quintessential bull, you know. He's just, I don't know, maybe it's a new tactic, but he's not an amiable, you know.
So are you telling me that the guy in the blue coat, the young 18-year-old, is Soundwave?
Apparently.
I'm telling you that he's claiming that, and he put the picture in.
For all we know, he could be a 60-year-old man.
I think a 60-year-old man would have put in a better picture of an 18-year-old lad, if I'm being honest.
Maybe. Rockefeller or something, you know.
Maybe that's what he wants you to think.
Well, I think it's great that he's engaging. If all of these things are correct, I think it's wonderful.
No, he sounds sincere. He just sounds very new.
That's a picture of Typo after, isn't it? That's Typo. Helmet high.
We've seen Typo.
I thought that's what Typo looked like. I can't remember. He's got a little goatee and all that, isn't
it? Typo makes his own videos and he's out there and he's on YouTube and that, like, you can see Typo.
I know, but I thought that was a couple of years ago when he was a bit more portly.
The latest ones, you remember he went down looking at the mushrooms and looking at those strange stone things. Do you not remember? He went out asking.
And this is where he drives in his beautiful Mercedes-Benz. Is that what you're talking about, Del?
Well, that's right, yeah.
Right, let's go have a look. I can't remember.
And then he pretends he's a drunkard and then
Then
puts forward all the latest philosophical...
One of the greatest collection of ongoing Demijohn projects. Just bubbling away. There must be about 20 of them in one corner of the room.
Have you been there?
I was sort of showing off my little, wine-making thing. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, fucking...
Top this.
The production is mad, you know? It's.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, he had a fucking literally knocking out more booze than you.
It was literally, at one shot alone, there must have been about 12. And the Demijohn is like a gallon, you know? So,
yeah.
And then have a look in here, and he shows you more, and it's all an ongoing thing. And he did, to be fair now, he did say as well, he says, you know, a lot of people around here would be hooked on big pharma prescriptions if it wasn't for, you know, the likes of me. So, That was good, you know.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, anything's better than a pill.
To be fair, no, I don't know, before Frank's dog started barking, it was like as if he was trying to lead it into a thing where Typo was not real or something, and I already thought that, and I realized my mistake at the time and actually apologized to the guy, you know, so I'm not going to start accusing him of being an agent again.
He interrupts like an agent. I think that's about the only thing we can agree on.
He does that anyway, you know.
For fuck's
sake, yeah. We can all be accused of that, man, you know.
Exactly.
So if that's all you've got, like, oh, he interrupts the conversation sometimes, or he's drunk or whatever, you know, that's like...
He doesn't even say, oh, yeah, I'm wearing earphones, and he doesn't even wear earphones, he hasn't come through a speaker. So you can't really battle against that.
Room 33, you know, for a while till he sources it out, but, you know, I'm beyond that thing, and it's the same as well with Zal there, and, you know, I was going down that road of total fecundity. Well, you know, you could kind of casually say it, you know, if they've got this information or they got this technology or they could be doing whatever, X, Y, and Z, then Zal is there and he's working with the latest technology. And you can pause for thought then, you know. It's kind of like grounding. You know, people need grounding along the way as well, instead of just running away with you know, it's a fancy.
I mean, it's really hard to argue against, but they have it in secret. You can't argue against that.
You know, like, it's like a default for a lot, and that's also given them, they are, and we all have our, you know, that's another conversation altogether. But everyone has the default, you know, about everything like that. You know, they're more advanced, they're 50 years ahead, you know, and all this kind of stuff. The same with the, you know, the whole flat earth, globe earth, space concept. You know, it's like certain people default to a certain, and that's it. But like, to be honestly, in my mind, I have said to myself before, and I have to keep reminding myself, you know, where the hell did it all start? Would we just, you know, believe, you know, the people who bring us space, the same people who bring us the, you know, the ridiculous hoaxes, the people who bring us the fucking dodgy history, not just separate certain bits and go, well, oh, this bit must be real, or this bit is real, and blah, blah, blah. There has to be a complete feckin', they all are under scrutiny, as far as I'm concerned. Every end of it.
The thing is, though, if there is an actual day, and this is being done intentionally, then at least they must have a written down real version, right?
We could say that, or we could speculate that, but do we even know that? You know, no. Their ancestors got all the marbles by out of brute force and ignorance, and they've been spending the rest of their time coming up with bullshit stories to keep the descendants of all the others who were enslaved in some sort of check, line or check.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting real deep there, but what is it?
Too far out to even speculate that one. It's kind of like a simple answer, but, you know, it's worthy of just thinking about it, even.
Say that again, Dad, because I went to just turn off my oven. What was that worth thinking about?
If the people, whatever, whenever, far back, right, out of brute force, right, and a true and brute force and ignorance, but, you know, because it's a saying, but yeah. Out of just sheer brute force, and they got all the marbles, and then we're at where we are now is, you know, from all the, you know, the bullshit that they've been
doing. Yeah, a consequence of that.
The descendants of the fucking controllers trying to control the descendants of the controlled. And we've gotten to this ridiculous stage now where we're at now, where and there's leaks in the barrel, and we looking at the leaks. You know, we're the ones looking at it, you know. Then there's others that are there that are deliberately, you know, drilling holes in the barrel and controlling that flow, you know.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean there. And the equilibrium between the control and the controllers has never been questioned before, but now the people who are meant to be in control have not been paying attention and not been doing their duties. Now they're been interacting on the internet and taking drugs and doing all that, and that's why everything's fallen to bits. I'm not saying that is. I'm just saying that's what would happen if it was the way you were saying.
Also, everyone is sort of assuming that them is one faction.
It is. It has to be, man. Yeah, I've come to this conclusion. It has to be one. Oh, God. Right. You know, you got the best at one thing.
Yeah.
Right. So if someone is the best, if someone controls every one of these companies, just for argument's sake, someone can make anything happen in one of these companies or anything to do with the conglomerate, star, boxer, footballer, owned, anyone who's owned by one of these companies, if they can make something happen there and that, and it's soaked up by the other companies, then they're the ones in control. So there will be one person or one mind that's in control from the top. Because it'll just counteract it, or, you know, it'll be taken, it'll be, you know, what's the word? Suspension. You know, it'll be soaked up, the influx, whatever it is. There has to be, you can't have two. You can have two people with the same mindset.
That is fair, but even taking that scenario, no one lives forever. And your son is not you.
I don't know if no one lives forever, you know, mate.
Valid, I guess.
You know, I'm only saying that just for argument's sake, because you're the same. But from best guess, maybe reincarnation.
Yeah, no, if they do control, reincarnation has been a thing very, very debated for a very long time. So, actually, I find it very interesting, but I don't know if I believe in it.
Well, the way I say it is you just go through the amount of books written on one thing, and reincarnation seems to have a lot of books about it. Maybe that's just us grasping for, like, you know, an old.
Reincarnation has things taken out of books deliberately.
That's true.
In case it reminds everybody that they're all here on a game and they have their sort of their short-term memory wiped just for the game, and then people that cop on, they end up getting, oh, you're out of the game now. You see, we're talking in, or I'm talking in that game.
Yes, but you're not talking virtual reality, you're talking, no, you're talking the fucking eternal consciousness, waking up for a dream, how do you know what's real? And I believe that totally.
But that is the Matrix, isn't it?
To quantify it, it's just to break it down within the dream that it's already in. You know what I mean? It's like trying to extrapolate what your dream is about while you're in the dream. You can't. No, you can only do that while you're not in your dream. You can't say what a dream's about while you're in it.
No, but it feels perfectly real while you are.
Oh, I love it. I used to wear a dream alarm. Put a few bits on your arm and wear them all day. And then when you wake up in your dream...
You could still be in one.
Yeah, there's no difference. That's why I love that Alan Watts, you know, that little speech he does. It's wonderful. How far would you go if you were in control? You'd push yourself to the ultimate, where you went out and you wake up exactly where you are now. Of course you would.
Well, wouldn't the best thing be you just leave everyone alone? How about that one for a concept?
Well, yeah, but what if you are everyone? I think that's what that was what his concept was. He took that equation out of it. Yeah, that's what I mean. He took that out, like the Zen Buddhist thing. He said, you are everyone experiencing me. He's the David Icke shite. But the preface was still made sense. If you were all in control, it's wonderful to listen to. Del, play it. Go on, sing us alive. You can play it. It'll come out live.
What?
Inception, Alan Watts. You'll love it. He's dead nice. If you've not heard it, Zal, I do suggest it, and think he's going to play it. So he's brilliant, though. He has everything. But he's got some wonderful music in the background. But nevertheless, the premise makes sense. If you were all Maya and all in control, what would you do? And I think that's what most religion points at. There is someone more almighty than you, or you can go into this philosophy thing where you say, I am the only one, because I'm the only one who can...
You can also think about it and say, I'm not in control now, so I'm not fit to make that decision.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Say 75 years...
This is 4 minutes 44 seconds long.
...into 8 hours of sleep. Filling all your wishes, you could design for yourself what would be the most ecstatic life. Banquets, dancing girls, wonderful journeys, gardens, music beyond belief. A couple of months, this sort of thing, at 75 years a night. Be getting a little taste for something different. And you would move over to an adventurous dimension. Dangers involved, and the thrill of dealing with dangers. You could rescue princesses from dragons. Go on dangerous journeys. Blow them up. Eventually get into contest with enemies. After you've done that for some time, new wrinkle. Forget that you were dreaming. That you would think it was all for real. To be anxious about it. Woke up. Then you say, well, dare each other on things. How far out could you get? Could you take? What dimension of being lost? Abandonment of your power. What dimension of that could you stand? Because you'd know you'd eventually wake up. After you'd gone on doing this, you see, for some time, you would suddenly find yourself sitting around in this room. All your problems, etc. Talking with me. You know that that's not what you're doing. Could be. Because after all, what would you do if you were God? You were what there is, the self. That's the basic texts of Hinduism. One of them starts out saying, in the beginning was the self. Looking around, it said, I am. it is that everyone to this day, who is there, says it is I. You were God, in the sense that you knew everything, could be bored.
You see, and that is definitely the amount of...
He's still
talking.
Possible development. And we had, instead of a dial telephone on one's desk, more complex. And one touch, give you anything you wanted. Aladdin's lamp. Would eventually have to introduce a button labeled surprise. Because all perfectly known futures, as I pointed out, are past.
Naturally.
Future is a surprise. If you were God, then get lost.
Yeah. But literally, though, you've got this philosophy crowd, this philosophy bent that will go into that side of analysing, you know, if it's constructed. That is about as far as you have to go into it. And he was extrapolating, and he actually went into it a bit too much. You don't need to go into it that far, but you can break everything down to that level. So why is philosophy taking such a hold?
The thing is, though, does that line of reasoning work? Mm. If you were God and knew everything, would you be bored? Does that line of reasoning work?
If you were bored
and knew how to deal with it?
Well, first of all, you're trying to figure out what bored means, aren't you? You don't know for me.
Yeah, it's
obviously
a human concept. I don't think that logic works.
No, it doesn't, but they're putting it into the language for us. Sorry, John. Sorry, Mike.
I was going to go. Hang on there, mate. Your problem is that you still think you're Napoleon, but you're not Napoleon, are you? No, you're not. Your total consciousness having an experience of Napoleon.
Napoleon complex.
So, is anybody else familiar with any more of Alan Watts' work?
I've listened to loads and loads of him, but like I said, I suffered a self-inflicted brain aneurysm by having too much fun.
I just played it as a favour for Denny, by the way.
Yes, yeah, you see, I do like him, but I do like the step he is, and I think he's a solid step.
So, with Alan Watts, here's what you get, okay? This is what makes Alan Watts so dangerous. Not to someone who already is hip to the con, he does have a lot of good things to say. And Alan Watts, his purpose was to exist in the 1950s and 60s for a particular purpose. A lot of his things are given in context to those particular times. Of course, he uses a lot of things that can be adapted to later time periods, and you know, it's good stuff.
It became almost sage-like, didn't it, 10 or 15 years later?
Yes, and the reason he was there, because I'm sure everybody's aware of his backers and how he was particularly utilized, but here's what he spread. First of all, he was instrumental in spreading the idea, the theosophical idea of, you know, kind of merging Eastern philosophy with the Western way of life. He's coming around the same time as the Beatles are kind of providing that imagery and all that type of stuff. But the one thing that he does is he gives you all the nice stuff like he did there. And then in the context of the modern 1950s, 1960s world, he's kind of advocating that has anybody ever seen the movie, what's it called? The Peter Sellers movie. Thank you, Alice B. Tolkis.
Never, Joe.
Okay.
No.
Well, this is a movie with Peter Sellers and what's that girl's name? B something or other.
Jamie Lee. Joking.
Remick.
Not Lee Remick.
Janet Lee.
No, she was. Lee something. She was on Dallas, but I can't remember what her last name is. Anyways, the story goes, and this is a Paul Mazursky film, too, and he has a lot of films like this as well that kind of caters to this sort of philosophy at the time, is Peter Sellers is a lawyer, and one day he has an epiphany, and he decides to start taking acid and become a hippie and just drop out. And that's who Alan Watts is speaking to. He's speaking to that particular person in that particular time period, and he is advocating a full-blown return to a childlike mentality. And even though there are certain aspects to it, like where he's talking about how, children are kind of, they're not toxified yet by all of the, he doesn't really talk about culture very much, but he talks about toxic traditions and how traditions shape the mind of a child who who should have this kind of wild mind. And then what he does is he puts the adult that's already existing in this current culture, and he's giving them these ideas. But when you get into Zen philosophy, is it promotes a return to a very, if interpreted in the wrong way, it promotes a return back to a very simple way of thinking that makes it easy for the guru to be guiding you instead of you actually thinking for yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then you get on to Alan Watts telling everybody, well, that's been done already, isn't it? Everyone else is, they're trying to keep everybody in a childlike mentality.
It works as well straight after the war.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is like, I'm not saying anybody in here is doing this. I'm saying, like, people...
John's always that defensive. John, you can call us names. We don't care. We'll still love you.
Yeah, I don't even remember the last time I called somebody a name.
Go on, continue your train of thought, because it's... Oh, go on. And then he stopped.
No, it's... What I was getting to is, I've got a couple of Alan Watts books on my bookshelf because they were my wife's from college, right? So everybody reads them in passing if you're taking a philosophy class or something like that, right? So, or like me, you come across them from people just as easy as you read, somebody might read, Jack Kerouac or something like that. So, those type of things, they get passed around and handed down, and they're real easy to adapt and real interesting stuff to adapt to a later time period. But if you look at Watts and what he was instrumental in doing, he really is only, he's like the Beatles. It's the same thing. The Beatles really only existed from 62 to 69, because that's the only time period they were necessary for. And I'm just Billy Idol talking to myself. He was dancing with himself. I'm talking to myself.
Well, you do get the best answers that way.
The streamer bot's not unmuted. Even the streamer bot muted himself.
You know, like, Dell just phoned me by accident. I had no idea what was going on. That was wicked. That.
Back off. Yeah,
that. I was sorry. There we go. Stop. Sorry, John. I missed the last 30 seconds. Well, last 20 seconds. What did you say there, mate?
I missed the last 30 minutes.
No. Trouble is, you're the only voice I do pay attention to. If I did drive, you'd have to be my sat nav now, mate. I'd have to get you to record it all. So I did pay attention.
Yeah. So, anyways, to apply what we're talking about.
But no, I was up to where you said it was your wife's book from college.
Oh, I see. And I've got what's the book? I've got Alan Watts, the book. I also have, what's the other one? The Way of Zen.
Right.
And those are my wife's books from college, which I was saying, if you take a philosophy class or something like that, you're going to come across his stuff. And so, like I'm saying, those things get taught in later generations, or they get passed down, or somebody, I was saying it was easily accessible as something like Jack Kerouac. But
yes.
But really, Alan Watts was only relevant to the particular time period he existed in, just like the Beatles were only relevant in from 62 to 69. So he was, you know, like a lot of the stuff he talked about, you can take away from it some good things.
I think the archaeologists have got a name for that era. It was called the Button Down Era.
The Button Down Era, yeah. Yeah, it will be... excuse me. There were a lot of people around that particular time period, and this is one of the things I've wanted to do on some HBC special reports in the future. It's just kind of hard to get around to doing research lately, but you see, there's a lot of things, and Alan Watts was based out of California as well, and a lot of things, especially in the Los Angeles area, there was an onslaught of New Age and Eastern philosophy stuff, writer, you know, 1950s. It's interesting that this stuff all pops up right as the modernism sets in, right? So you have this modernism that comes in, and immediately when this modernism comes in post-World War II, what pops up everywhere? Scientology, self-realization, self-help philosophy, what's the other one? Course in Miracles, Esalen Institute, all these things all pop up. And you would think that within the new modern that is going on after World War II, people would be looking for different philosophies than stuff that would be critiquing that particular type of lifestyle or the world that was being built up around them. But it's interesting that the one of the reasons that philosophy was so accessible to a person living in the modern world is it promoted self. It promoted looking at yourself, looking inward. Look, it's all about you. It's self-absorbed therapy, right? And so that's a great thing. That's one of the things that Alan Watts is all into. He's probably well aware of what he's teaching people is that you're teaching someone to become very self-absorbed, and you're spending a lot of time on yourself. What's the other one at that time period was EST therapy, the human potential movement, where they, people, they're having problems in their lives, and they're kind of go to this these meetings if you're having problems with your spouse, but you go by yourself to give yourself some time. It's not something you work out together. You need to get in touch with your own emotions. That creates a very self-absorbed society by the time the 1970s rolls around. And Napoleon, you can vouch for this because you like so much of that type of music, is you have a self-absorbed musical landscape as well that's very focused on the self. But to make this relevant for the audio chat within the fakeologist realm, Alan Watt was most likely a fake.
Oh, undoubtedly. Then what about a lot of the conversations that have been recorded of him and his boat, which is only fell into, you know, his fundamental beliefs, which he can call into question the Dalai Lama, and then I'm sure, John, you've got some stories you could tell about the Dalai Lama and his supposed escapades. Well, he was meant to be, you know, the Maharishi, sorry, the one who was traveling with the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and same with Gandhi as well. All these people have their own discrepancies.
I just saw this, I got reminded of this today. I totally forgot that Gandhi visited Chatham House in 1931. And gave a speech at the Royal Institute of International Affairs called The Future of India. So anybody who doesn't, I'm not saying anybody doesn't, but anybody who thinks Gandhi was a good guy, Gandhi went to the Royal House, or the Chatham House at the Royal Institute of International Affairs while he was becoming, you know, Mr. Big Stuff.
He seemed to be the perfect color the thing at the time. And his letters, were his racist letters to, was it to Winston Churchill? Is it good old Winston who was doing the racist letters to Gandhi? But one of them, it's terrible. And I mean, really, really bad. He didn't like anyone of darker skin colour, let's put it that way.
Who, Winston?
No, Gandhi.
He's got a lot of stuff. Yeah. I mean, his daughter.
Yeah, it's all published. You know, there's a lot of stuff published. It's not a secret.
Alan Watt brought this up one time, and this really made me think. He really got me thinking along this track, I have to say, you know, 10, 12 years ago. He brought up a British soap opera, the one,
Coronation Street?
Coronation Street, yeah. Or Coronation Street, yeah. He brought that up, and so, and how the societal changes were running parallel to what was taking place in inside the soap opera. And it's funny too, because the British soap operas are so obvious. Like, when you know that, when you're aware of that fact that they do predictive programming inside of the, you know, the dramas, it's almost like more pronounced and obvious than American ones in a funny way. That was pretty interesting to note. The current example, or, you know, at least in the past 10 years, would be Downton Abbey. If you watch that Downton Abbey show, it's so funny. Like, how obvious it is that they're doing that they're promoting social engineering, but using nostalgic time periods to subjects that are particularly relevant to today.
What, just by look or the way they speak? Because, I mean, I don't really have any interaction with, well, when I say interaction, I don't really witness any of the people on telly, in the shows. So what's your main bit of evidence there?
The subject matter. So Downton Abbey it started in 2008, right as the financial crash is going on. Austerity is being implemented all over the place and all that type of stuff. So this series starts off at the end of the feudal reign, and it kind of focuses on a family who is a feudal lord, you know, it's run by a feudal lord, and they're moving into the 1920s. So World War I is kind of upon them. Even prior to World War I, you're starting to see some sort of a shift culturally. And the stuff that is kind of going on in London is kind of spreading out to the countryside.
Got it, yeah.
So one of the characters is, of course, gay.
Of course.
Yeah. And he, of course, has to hide himself, and he's full of shame for his gayness. And then there's other things. One of these lords' daughter. She becomes part of the women's rights movement and becomes like a rebel.
Does she burn a bra?
No, she doesn't burn her bra, but she goes to some like protest rally and, you know, gets hurt or something, and makes her daddy very angry.
Oh, just like the girl who threw herself in front of the king's horse. I think she might have died. The women's movement.
Yeah. Anyways, so on and so forth, as it moves in through World War One, they turn their manor, their abbey, into a hospital for the returning soldiers, and so their entire landscape and their world is changed by this thing. And of course, from that point on, the attitudes of the men and the women towards each other start to change as well. And so, of course, they have this one where that girl who's a rebel, she falls in love with one of the servant boys. And so there's the typical class rivalry, and the dad has to accept it. And he's an old fuddy-duddy for not accepting. He just basically has to learn to not be so old-fashioned. And then so on and so forth down the line.
Why can't her dad just accept him, John? Why? Is it because he's from a lower background? Is it just because he scared him? He scared him in some way?
Well, first of all, he's Irish.
And
he's a chauffeur.
Oh my God. Dirty, oily Irishman.
Yeah, so he's a dirty Irishman, and he's a chauffeur, and he's not good enough for... But see, here's the twist, and this is so funny. This is so typical. I mean, so that's what I mean. I watch this stuff, and I laugh. So they get married. They run off, get married. The father's furious. He's going to have it all annulled and everything. And then the daughter, you know, protests. And then she dies during childbirth. So they have the baby. And so the dad accepts it, you know, because of the child. You know, he says, okay, well, we have this child, and this child's going to represent, you know, the family. And,
okay, let me do that. Yep.
Anyways, and so forth. On down the line, he has another daughter, and she, you know, as the decade rolls forward through the jazz age and the drinking and the drugs and the whole bit, his other daughter ends up becoming a member of parliament and eventually is running for prime minister. This is taking place, of course, right around the time of elections like Theresa May and Hillary Clinton.
Hmm. Do you know, that's what you were doing that over, that's got to be a couple of series, that.
Yeah, it's like 4 seasons or something like that.
Maybe the American sitcoms are more subtle because you actually do get better programming in other channels, or maybe we're just ignorant. We are ignorant British. You know, it does take a lot of things to make us, you know, think that we are, you know, not the best thing going. I don't mean that personally. I mean, you know, they are very ignorant Brits. I'm including Del there, by the way. He says he don't think he's UK, but he is now. There you go. But yeah, no, we are when it comes down to it. A lot of us try and do our little bit, but that sort of wears out.
Everybody is everywhere. It's not the Brit. It's not just the dumb Brit.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. We're all the same now, aren't we? The level of ignorance sort of petered out pretty much. Level of ignorance is there. Yeah, even.
Yeah.
Although the level of politeness is still... It's not even. Some people are more polite. Americans, I feel, are a lot more polite than British.
You know, it's funny. Without a Trace just came in the room, and for a second there, I thought it said without a race.
Ooh. Well, anyway, I moved him out of there, but only because I didn't realize he was unmuted. So it was my fault. Anyway, I'm going to mute. Okay, then I'm not. Del, you there? Yeah.
Del's.
He's there, he's doing something with his guitar. He's got his guitar out. He's got 8-foot pedals with it.
He can't hear. He can't hear because he's cranking Bullet the Blue Sky right now.
That sounds like the best cocaine ever. Anyway, Without a Trace is there, so as soon as you come in, Without a Trace, say hello. No. Mason? Oh, there we go.
I unmuted. Am I still causing a lot of noise?
No, it sounds good.
Mason, what's my noise level like?
There sounds like a fan in the background. It's not that bad.
Okay, yeah, I don't know where the noise is coming from, but I'll go ahead and continue talking about whatever you're talking about. I'll mute myself. Got a few things to do, and I'll maybe check in a little bit later. All right, y'all have a good talk.
See you, mate.
Okay, man.
So go on, Del. Tell us something new. What you learned?
Oh, I was on the stream of consciousness earlier on, but I kind of lost it. And I had to go, you know, so I'm only back. I was AFK, as they say.
away from keyboard. I'm learning the lingo. But what is it when you go into turn you over off? GTOO. There you go.
I told him you had bullet the blue sky blasting too loud and couldn't hear us.
There's an old one. There's the blast from the past.
Couple of granddads. But it's not even, you know, the same age as me. You just got better music taste. Most of my records are in charity shops now, still.
You know, I remember to this day what they actually said at the time about that song. Oh, what Bono said to The Edge, the old narrative, isn't it?
What?
Edge, I want you to put Nicaragua through your amplifier. Bombing, right? The blue sky. Do you remember they had those little skirmishes in America? They were sort of tidying up all the little islands around and the little... Yeah.
I worked with a guy who went to all of them. He was totally crazy.
Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. When Bono said to The Edge, put Nicaragua to your amplifier, and we got Bullet the Blue Sky.
Do you know what is bad in it? I would have to take it away with this, especially at Live Aid. You two, all these bands, and they don't mean get away with it. I mean, everybody thought there was wars going on, but, you know, no dictators.
Like I was saying, that whole thing was CIA run.
Yeah. But why?
The whole thing.
But does it not make people think now that there's people out there talking about it now? Means that obviously the people, there was no one talking about it then. That means that they obviously didn't want anyone talking about it. You know, it's only at the time they want to let it go. And, well, nothing's officially true until it's denied, is it? You know what I mean? Pretty much that's the way it's done.
Well, the other thing is like I posted that yesterday, and it came out later that all that money was used to, you know, fund opposition rebels in Africa. And then, you know, Sir Geldof comes out and says, no, that's not true. But like I was saying, I had an article from a rock magazine from the 80s that I clipped out, and I sent it to Jan Ervin, and so I don't have it anymore, but he has it. And it's an interview with Stuart Copeland talking about how the CIA helped out with Live Aid.
There you go.
Because some the journalist asked him a question. He said, you know, oh, your dad's a famous CIA operative. Has he, you know, did he, was he able to have any connections to, you know, helping out with any of this stuff? And he says, yeah, we were able to get help from the CIA when getting, you know, the stuff together for Africa.
Do you know what, John? That doesn't surprise me. Nothing's hidden. Yeah. Because who do we go to? And who goes to the person who can control it?
It's funny, too, because I'm not so sure that in the... I don't remember this, but in the history of Live Aid, is Stuart Copeland, like, in there as being, like, one of the guys in the background of Live Aid? It's just mostly...
No. Yeah, no, he's not. He's not. He's shown. You see the other time getting on a bus waving. Getting off a bus waving, but it's literally nothing.
Yeah, so if anybody doubts it, you can find Rock Express magazine from 1988 with Stuart Copeland in Rock Express. So I'm not making that up.
Yeah, John, that article you posted about the guy saying, the redneck saying, let's go, I ended up doing some Google searching, and I came across a song by Neil Young called Let's Roll, and the whole song's written from the perspective of, you know, the hero about to take down the terrorist on the phone with his wife. It's the whole story in a song. I just read the lyrics, and oh my goodness, it was like so cheese cornball. But you know, it kind of reminded me of the whole you know, like Wag the Dog, where they come out with the song, and there's the whole ribbon, and you know, that was a big thing with 9/11. Everyone had the ribbons and the flags.
Interesting that It's interesting that a lot of the same people are always used. And on that note, Phil forwarded me a compilation of movie clips. He posted it yesterday. It's called Moon Key. And this is bizarre, man. You guys got to go watch that. Is Phil in here? No. Oh, yeah, he is.
I have seen that video, Moon Key. Go and elaborate, because I did watch it about 2 months ago.
Oh, my gosh, dude, that's bizarre. It's all the same actors in these movies that just revolve around the moon and monkeys.
That's the one, yeah.
It's just weird. I mean, like, I want to know how somebody, like, I mean, somebody must have watched a lot of film and, like figured out a lot of that, like, sat down and thought about, you know, each one of these actors and how they just happen to be in these particular films and saying these particular things that have to do with monkeys and moon and,
sorry, you just tripped me there. I think there was one. Do you remember Omega Man?
Yeah, Charlton Heston.
And do you remember the buddy? Was it Matthias?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I think he makes a speech, and I think it's exactly the same as the one that he makes when he's in I Am Legend. As the fella that makes in I Am Legend. You know, the buddy in I Am Legend. Or one of them, it's very similar, apparently.
Isn't I Am Legend supposed to be the Omega Man, though?
Yeah, exactly. So, you're a bit of...
Yeah.
Sorry, Dave.
Omega Man was like the middle movie, because there was one before that Vincent Price.
Oh,
it was the actual movie, man. The actual same movie, right?
Yes, that's where he lives in the house opposite, and he's got his friend in the basement.
It was based off the same short story that the other two movies were, you know yourself. The Omega Man was based off the movie, and then we had...
Yeah, that is wonderful.
One was the same thing, but it was sort of like, you know, as you know, like we said, it was made in the 60s.
And from the British point of view, don't you know?
Yeah, well, it was zombies, but, like, you know, he was the last man on Earth, basically, and I think that's what it was called, the last man on Earth. And
certainly
I think
was.
That's what the Omega Man and the Omega Man 2, basically, well, the Omega Man remake with
Will Smith.
Have you heard of that?
I have.
The original of the original. Kind of.
I have. My mate raves about it. I show me it, but I was very, very drunk at the time. Yes, he has his friend who's been changed into one of these monsters, so to speak. And he keeps him in his basement. And then at night he moves over the road and lives in the house opposite. Yeah. Wonderful film. I remember. Anyway, going back to characters being involved in different films there. So, John, so that was the ones being involved in the moon and the monkeys. That's the moon key. And yet that is the answer to a lot of things. You know, they say...
What do you think of that, Phil?
Think about the characters and the reused across films and then... The themes coming out in that.
Are you having moon pies and monkey bread?
Yeah, crockpot stew and rice. Let's see, the moon. Okay, so I think that if the key message in it has to do with. It's very, very much open to the viewer, I think. I don't know, I mean, but it seemed to me that there's a lot of moon imagery which would, I don't know, give someone an opportunity to see something about the films,
here's the tie-in. It's moon, monkeys, and 9/11, and then there's these collective of actors that all seem to have roles in these films that revolve around those three subjects. And it's not, actually, it's not even 9/11, it's just New York and the Twin Towers. And so what this guy did is he spliced all these pieces of film together, and you watch them in succession, and there are some parts of these films that blend together with the other parts of other films, and sometimes you don't even know, like, which movie you're watching. Pretty funny. But, yeah, so it's Twin Towers, Monkeys, and Moons. And I personally don't really know what to make of it. I guess you could speculate and say, like, were these people's careers, like, kind of planned out to where this was gonna, this type of messaging was going to be like their kind of main focus within their acting career?
That actually came to me as well, that I believe these films have probably been written decades, like just way in advance. So I was watching the old Titanic movie, and they had the boat like sink in a different way. And then I remember in the 90s when the recent one came out, the like planted story, or like the news story about how the boat had broken in half, and like it was just another detail, but it's another trip through the news cycles. And I would think that having these scripts for movies, having the scripts for the events well in advance, each of these details, they're just part of the story that comes out later. So if you're casting, if they're casting thematic actors or thematic like carriers of a message through multiple films, then they have probably, like, I don't know, a lot more than these scripts and stuff written, like, you know, all the hopes of ends as well. And
what about this? I was just thinking about this today because that movie was bothering me all night. My son's teething right now again, and so he kept waking up like every hour, every 2 hours, and so at like 3 a.m. I was watching that thing, and I just kept thinking about it, and then I thought about the dollar, you know, the $5 bill, the $10 bill, the $20 bills, and how, you know, about that, about folding the bills, and it makes the smoking Twin Towers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, what is it, like, the $100 bill it looks like the towers after they got hit, like, where the holes are. It's actually right in the exact point where the planes, you know, were supposed to be hitting, right? And
yeah, that would definitely make somebody who's totally unaware of like any of the hoax stuff, any of the conspiracy quote unquote media, have to like pause and think, like, so what, you know, they planned the planes, or I mean, like, it would just totally hit you pretty hard to see that the bills mentioned.
Yeah, and there was an episode a while back that Chris and I did. It was on a 9/11. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, but we were talking about 9/11 albums, and there was that one group. I can't remember what they're called, but they had an album cover where it had the Twin Towers on the cover, and they were blown up like from like right in the same area where the planes would have hit. And in order for that to be, like, you have no predisposition to do that.
There is also that one thing in the, what was it, Lil Wayne video, where it was a lot of skeletons in a cinema after the,
right,
you know,
yeah,
Batman shooting or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same thing. But specifically focusing on how the, you know, this stuff is computer-generated imagery and pre-planned ahead of time to match up with these sort of like things, like, you know, $5, $10, $20, $100 bills, $50 bills.
But you did just say my trigger word, but I let it slide.
A trigger word? What was it?
Yeah, CGI is kind of what triggers me.
Oh, it does. Oh, I said computer-generated imagery, not No three-letter acronyms there.
Fair enough. Carry on.
I remember your angle now. Okay, I remember it now.
Wasn't Titanic based on a book that came out before it started, basically doing the exact same plot, if you want, before the actual event? Wasn't that a thing?
Same with the atomic bombs. I don't know about the Titanic being in a book beforehand, though.
Hang on, I'll look it up.
Well, yeah, and Chris and I talked about Titanic before, how it kind of comes out before, you know, it kind of prepares you for a disaster right before 9/11. It's like this, going back to this big tragic event, and just that in and of itself, revisiting this whole tragic event was kind of predictive programming. But there's no way you could get that imagery, whether it would be on this album cover. I wish to remember what it was. It has like two guys standing on the album cover, and they're in front of the Twin Towers, and the Twin Towers are blowing up right at the top.
I found it. The Wreck of the Titan, apparently, was the book. But that's a bit close.
The Wreck of the Titan.
I mean, if I guess just keeping back onto the theme of setting these things up with fiction, quote unquote, beforehand, or other works in media, they're part of a bigger running story. Then it's more than just the event. It's more than just the setup. There's probably something else to follow it even.
Well, an interesting thing about that is, like, okay, let's say you're watching Moon Key, and the way that we're all kind of taught to think, like, just kind of on a, I'm saying for the general population, who's non-religious, but now they believe in kind of a metaphysical reality or something that's kind of an amalgamation of all religions, with science included in there. I would call that, without people actually knowing it, they're actually, you know, theosophical science worshippers. I'm just talking like the average person on the street who goes to their job and, you know, smokes weed on the weekends and parties or whatever. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying that's those type of people who are not thinking about stuff, they're kind of easily duped into, if you were showing them, and I would say that this carries over into quote unquote truthers too, because they'll look at something like Moon Key as kind of a synchronicity, and a lot of the events of 9/11 being kind of a synchronicity. Or
synchronicity
whatever.
Is a nice way to, you know, wave the hand at the obvious correlation. Never thought of it like
that's
that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so people think there's these, like, you know, that it takes some sort of like spirit, you know, the elite have this like power over the spiritual world, and they're able to manifest these things through ritual magic and through spiritual intervention, right? And then, because they'll never ever consider, and I've been there too, admit it. I used to think that way. I used to see all these anomalies and things like that, and I would think to myself, okay, they're using ritual magic to make this stuff line up, and never ever consider the possibility that it was all planned out ahead of time with the use of fakery. Which is the real magic.
It also goes to show exactly how controlled it is, the narrative, how little you actually, you know, can vote on. Also, I noticed something recently that pretty much every major, event nowadays end up with its own movie. You know, you had 9/11, you had Boston Marathon. Now they're even making one of, you know, Utøya and all that crap. They're making a movie of that right now. It's a massive thing in Norwegian media.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
So if an event has a movie, it's most likely fake. You can even look at it the other way around now.
Well, they're even making conspiracy movies. Like, they made a movie about Harry Seal, the drug smuggler.
Yeah.
And then they also made a movie, and I've never seen any of these ones. I don't plan on seeing them either. They made a movie, what was it, a couple of years ago, about Gary Webb.
Who's that?
Gary Webb was a journalist who allegedly was shot twice.
Oh, yeah.
The shotgun. And then there's another one I think they're making a movie about, or they did make a movie about, was the Danny Castellaro guy. Danny Castellaro was the guy who was investigating what he called the octopus, and it had to do with Bechtel Corporation. And
they also made a movie about that plane crash.
Oh,
on the river.
Sully.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, if Tom Hanks is in it, I mean, come on.
Yeah, pretty much.
Say again, Zal.
No, I just said he's the go-to poster boy for those kind of movies.
Yeah, the 9/11 one with the Jumper, was it called or something?
Jumper?
No, it couldn't have been called that, but I don't know, he was a dad in it or something. Well,
I must have missed that one.
It came out like right away.
Probably good I missed it.
Another one I want to point out was Collapse in 2009 with Michael Rupert, who was on Vice. One of their interviews with about civilization collapsing. So he had like a suicide, which now I can kind of guess pretty strongly that he didn't really. It just his character died off.
Suicided, or just retired.
Yeah, I wonder where these people go. But that's another
probably topic. Greenland. I mean, have you read all that Greenland theory stuff?
No.
They go beyond the ice crust on the pizza pie.
Well, why not?
With all the missing children on milk carton.
Yeah, that is actually interesting. Is the children actually real missing children? Is it just to spread fear? Or, are they actually taking kids? You can look at a lot of different ways.
Well, some buildings do burn down. But oh wait, was do you guys think that the Greenfell Tower was a fake? Because I'd be happy to hear that.
I have no idea. I wasn't paying attention at the news when that happened. I was busy.
Probably, but it looked really sad. So that's why I'm hoping that it was fake.
I don't care. It was really, really hyped in the media, so probably fake.
Yeah.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
John, what other themes did you pull out of the monkey, Starmie, something, it was Think video?
I don't know. A lot of Brad Pitt, a lot of, who else? Who's the other guy, people that are in a lot of those scenes? That was interesting that the same actor who plays the monkey in Planet of the Apes is the same guy who plays King Kong. It's like, I thought that was interesting.
And that the same character, same like Jeff Bridges, who chases down or has, I don't know, I didn't see the King Kong movie with him, but he was also in Tron, which they had in him getting like zapped into it. I don't know if there was more of it, but the technology had some parts in it in the film.
Well, another thing I thought was interesting that I never even thought of until I watched that last night is and it hit me as soon as the movie came on and I started seeing what the theme was. This is something that hit me right away. I'm all, oh shit, monkey viruses. I'm all, every fucking thing in here is going to have a monkey virus. I'm all, so monkeys are even incorporated into the fake virus scare. It's like, why monkeys? What is the thing with the monkey? Because of evolution, we've all been suckered into the idea that we all came apes. And so I never made that correlation before. I just thought about it while I was watching. I was like, like there's monkeys again popping up in the narratives, AIDS virus comes from monkeys, and they use monkeys in the testing facility, test everything out, and the monkeys are going to get loose and spread viruses, break,
Ebola.
Ebola.
Yeah, Outbreak, that movie.
Yeah, what happened with that, by the way? What? Didn't everyone die? Aren't we all dead?
You know, a black guy had sex with a monkey once, and he was gay and got everybody AIDS.
Well, the monkey was gay.
The monkey was gay, yeah, not the black guy.
Right. Fucking hell, John. Fuck. Close than mate.
Yeah, we got to make sure we clarify that.
I was thinking, you know, we got Charlie Sheen, the kook, you know, and he's the 9/11 guy, the celebrity, that one of the first, you know, Alex Jones had him on and all that, and now he's in like a mainstream movie about 9/11, the current one.
Sheen is a Jesuit last name. It's not Sheen. His brother is not Sheen. It's a given name from a certain rank in the Jesuit order, I think.
It's from Father Fulton Sheen, the Jesuit priest.
Yeah,
and Martin Sheen even admits that, because his real name is Martinez Devez, and he took his name from Father Fulton Sheen. Yeah.
That's what he said.
Wow. Yeah, that's new to me.
And they admit that. They don't even hide that. But it's
Kyle won't listen to what he says.
I mean, his brother is Kyle, a medium to this. You heard about
Kyle, him. Kyle don't listen to him. He's one of these guys out there trying to say that me and Charlie Sheen are Jesuit assassins. I mean, they're totally full of it.
That's as crazy as no planes. Don't look into it.
Vatican assassin, bro. Vatican assassin all the way.
That was unreal.
But yeah, there's Alex Jones has his own connections there, doesn't he, to the Jesuit order, and were alleged.
I wouldn't be surprised. It could explain a lot.
I know I've seen some videos that implied as such.
I mean, the best debunking video of Alex Jones is, what is it? And is it 2012 or no? It's the year 2000 when everyone is nuking everyone and we all die in the Y2K thing. And he's crying over there. That's amazing.
Just going back to the viruses and stuff. It surprised me the way that they had Planet of the Apes in the recent remake having a connection to like Outbreak and the other ones, like 12 Monkeys. It was in there. Another monkey movie, and the virus thing that in the recent recent Planet of the Apes movie was to like uplift them to be able to speak and take over the planet. So it wasn't what they were, you know. It's like I guess in the 12 Monkeys movie they had the viruses killing everyone from Bruce Willis's point of view, and in the 12 Monkeys, you don't really take it as, like, in any way, like, I mean, it's a really terrible thing, of, like, what they're doing, and then it just juxtaposes that with the Planet of the Apes remake that is lifting them up, but I guess at the same time, it's, like, you know, major die-off of people. I don't know, I never got that in the movie, how they would have as anything more than a plot device. Like, it didn't really make sense to me how the monkey virus that made them speak killed off humans at the same time. It just seemed like a weird plot device, but in this Starmy video, it like kind of explains why they would have done that in a weird way, if anyone else even watched it.
I've never seen a single apes movie. Not even the old ones, not the new ones. But I got the gist, but that's about it.
The end of the, one of them has like a nuke, and like, it's, I went and watched this, went back and watched this, it's like, they hit the bomb, and like, the ending credits or whatever, like just before that, the narrator says, like some worthless planet in the void blows itself up. The end. It's like, what? Another strange narration.
A bit grim. And hey, monkeys and nukes. There you go.
How about the monolith, though, John? That was a another theme in there.
Yes. Yes, the monolith. Yeah, 2001,
2010. Is there any monoliths in the Apes movies?
Well, in 2001.
2001, the Apes with the monolith?
No, I meant in the War of the Planet of the, you know, all those crappy movies.
Mm.
The
Apes movies. No.
Not the 2001 movies.
Yeah, but like what I was saying earlier was that they seem to plan these things well in advance so that by only like finally seeing it this way or you know, people like figuring these things out, I guess. I mean, I don't know if that's real, people figuring it out, but when they go back and say, you know, here's this movie 5 years ago, here's a movie 25 years ago, here's this event, you know, 250 years ago, that'd be really cool. But it like even if it wasn't directly in the Planet of the Apes movie, that the Planet of the Apes movie connects through this movie to the planet to 2001 and Planet of the Apes connect through this. It's kind of like
Well, I'll give you an example. When I was growing up, they would show Planet of the Apes. You know, it would be like Thanksgiving Day weekend. You know, all weekend long they show the Planet of the Apes movies, right? So I've seen them all at one particular time or another in my life. And then sometimes they would run 2001 A Space Odyssey on TV. And I've thought at different periods of life when 2001 A Space Odyssey would come on, I would think to myself, is this Planet of the Apes?
Actually, it's a total side note. Does the actual holiday have something to some sort of significance there? Thanksgiving and the Planet of the Apes movies? Thanksgiving. Explain that to me on Norwegian.
In America, and particularly probably in Los Angeles, but probably all over America now, they run marathons on television of different things. So like at Christmas time, they have a Twilight Zone marathon. They run an entire weekend, all 24 hours is just all Twilight Zone.
Yeah, no, I get that. I was asking of the roots of Thanksgiving. I mean, maybe it has some sort of correlation with some Bush narrative that could...
I just think I just think it has to do with it being a holiday and people are watching TV 48 hours.
Yeah, why do they want to push this on you on that holiday?
The thing that it makes me think about is the Native Americans in the East Coast. I have to look up their actual tribe or linguistic group, but they are kind of seen as savages, I guess, and it's like the juxtaposition of thanking. Thanking the savages for helping the colonizers survive, and then it really is an interesting juxtaposition because if the Planet of the Apes is like, you know, some connection between savagery and advanced technology, it kind of like has a it certainly fits.
That's what I was hinting at. I could almost see the subtext. There's always subtext to these things. They don't put it on random holidays year after year, and it's random. There has to be some sort of, you know, juxtaposition, as you said.
And that's what this Moonkey has a whole lot of, is like the nature, missing nature in 2010 movie. Like, I miss green. I miss the color green. Whew, man. That's an interesting way to put it. Like, but
what time of year did they run that movie? Christmas, wintertime?
Say again?
And that movie, when they run it on TV, is it in the wintertime when there's no green?
Well, he didn't mean it like that. He meant it like they're on a spaceship going to Jupiter or something. Well, I don't know. I mean, there's also the analysis of 2001 that it was scripted and filmed on Earth because, it's funny, the flags in the media room or whatever on the moon, supposedly on the moon, has the flags waving, which has always been like the, you know, is the moon footage the moon footage, they take the film footage taken from the walking on the moon real. Well, the flag is crimped to look like it's waving, but oh no, that's explained by this. It's like, you know, an obvious setup for like a straw man or something like that. And then in the 2001 film, they have a room without any reason for the flags to be waving, them waving there. So, but there's a lot of other like.
Bill, I've got a question for you. Do you think you could set up a moonshot where the flag didn't wave?
Are you talking about the moonwalks or the 2001?
No, just you now with a couple of astronauts and a moon set and everything. Basically, you don't have to do anything. All you got to do is film it where they walk past without the flag moving. Do you reckon you could do that?
I don't think it's possible for humans to go in a ship that far. I mean,
No, I'm saying on a set.
Oh, okay.
I could do it. With
So why did they let you see the flag move?
Yeah, that's part of the narrative that stretches beyond the film itself in order to then...
Remember, the film's to push the moon landing. The film actually pushes the moon landing. People say it's evidence against the moon landing.
No,
it's the only evidence they use for the moon landing. It's the best thing going. It's one of the best contradictions ever. It's amazing. I love it.
It's designed to have contradictions, though. It's like the
Yeah, of course, that's what I mean. But the fact that the flag moves means that you go, well, look, it couldn't have moved on the moon. Or, look, there's air on the moon. So obviously it's just had into the fallacy that they went to the moon. It's great. And it works.
Yeah,
it's...
I thought that it was trust by Kubrick, and he just fucked up. Easy way to explain it.
Stanley Kubrick lands, we're on our way. Oh, God.
The Rob Ager collative learning has the best analyses of this. It's really a well produced analysis of it reveals so much about what things you. I mean, how I don't understand how somebody could pick up these things without or even read into them after finding the key. Messages or key signals like that, like the flag waving or, you know, all these signs that make it look like they're setting up a future reveal of them having staged things like this.
I'm always skeptical with the NASA debunking stuff because the way I learned about it was from Fox. Fox in like 99 or 2000 ran one of the
Mulder, Fox Mulder.
No, Fox the network one of Bert Sabrell. That's his name, right?
Sabrell. Oh, God.
Yeah, they ran one of his things on network TV, and they like promoted it ahead of time. Like I remember waiting for weeks. Like, oh man, this, you know, it was the first conspiracy documentary I'd ever seen. Like it was before I had the internet. And, I'm like, why, how are they getting away with showing this? It didn't make sense.
Oh, there's a very, very good reason for that. In his movie, they still are in low Earth orbit, right? So low Earth orbit is possible. That's the point of his movie.
You don't even need to orbit. You can just, like they did with the moonwalk videos, they used, guide wires or whatever they call it for theater. I mean, you can see it all the time if you go to Vegas or wherever they have people flying around.
Yeah, I know that, and you know that. But the point of the movie is to instill in everyone that if it was fake in low Earth orbit, which means it is low Earth orbit, right? Get it?
I mean, yeah, it's like what do you call it when you got multiple themes in the movie, like the magenta or something. Film Magnolia, where you have a lot of different plots run from within the same story, but you have characters that are set up in different places, different, you know, I mean, like, it's possible to have a lot of different elements to the same story, or I mean, I guess at that point it's not really the story of, you know, what did the buildings do, or what did the spaceship do, or it's like what is the connection between each of these elements within another story.
It's also about the meta subtext, what they try to imprint you on with, and they try to imprint you with like two or three layers. So if you ever fall through one, you're still on one of theirs, right?
Exactly. And then this one is connecting. I mean, what would be the next one? I mean, I don't know. I don't really ever, I think, come up with much if I try to imagine, because it's, I don't know. I mean, I keep looking for like kind of any like film or whatever that breaks the fourth wall and talks to the camera or they what's up?
Go watch Deadpool. That's a movie about that, but not really. Yeah.
Can you talk about it? Like, what do you see them kind of showing in it out of beyond?
It's a movie about breaking the fourth wall. It's very different.
But it's not really breaking it. It's only like playing with the fourth wall. It doesn't really. It uses another four walls, the stage has the curtains on the side, the curtain, the backdrop, and then the fourth wall, the one that you only have in your mind, and then they play with that. But like, there are other ways in which like a structured environment has the theater itself and
I'm not sure I'm following, but do you mean like you felt after watching The Matrix for the first time?
Yeah, The Matrix is definitely a good one for this.
Equilibrium is sort of like that, sort of.
What was that one?
Well, it's a little bit like that. But it's a good movie anyway. Very, very topical for Fecology. Equilibrium.
Looks like John left, but I guess it just last time I was talking to him on the live chat, I remember saying about how the writer is a character in the staged wrestling matches on TV, and the writer can get questioned as, you know, like, I mean, there's more than one writer, of course, and the characters can participate. The actors, but when they are on the stage in the ring, you know, saying like, oh, why did you make us, you know, run around and look like idiots, you know? Well, I mean, like, I guess it's talking to the architect in Matrix, but like, I guess I just want to see maybe the cameraman, which is in 2001. Like, you can see the camera in 2001, but like, what I was saying is like, I want to see the camera, like, fall down. I guess, like, the light in Truman Show, maybe, you know, it falls down, and the serious light.
Maybe it's go that far.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it'd be like a documentary or something, maybe, but even at that point, it's still another film. Like, it's still another layer, so to speak.
I can't think of any good examples.
I'd have to look back. Maybe I took some notes or something.
Dark City could be something like that, right? If you're into Flat Earth and stuff.
What was that?
Dark City?
No.
It's very close to what you're talking about. Not entirely, but close enough.
98 or 1950?
98. I've never seen the 1950s. It's probably the same movie. I guess the Cube movies are like this, but that's a totally different genre.
Another one, though, on that wrestling theme. Oh, this one's got Jennifer Connelly. So it's definitely another film like that. But with the wrestling one, I was thinking about other kind of ways in which they go beyond the set, and like, because they do these interviews as like they do interviews in character, or they do interviews about their character. But even still, it's not as though like they have to break their another character. They could just go from one character to another. So it's not like they're all of a sudden themselves and ready to reveal the whole, you know, every layer that they've constructed before that. But the wrestler Bret Hart, his brother Owen Hart, supposedly fell down from the ceiling and killed himself or whatever the story was. But he didn't, like, I don't believe that because it was part of another faked thing, which was Montreal Screwjob. I'm looking at this stuff up. So it had to be fake because it was part of another fake thing. So if it set something else up, then it's...
So it's like a big role situation.
What kind of role?
The movie The Crow, sort of like that.
Oh, okay. Crow. I don't know, but I know of it.
I died, and you know all that.
But they had another staged event where they actually put a mummy, a dummy that fell, and they like called an ambulance and stuff for the dummy, and they kind of say that one was itself a dummy. So, or like, this gets to what Rochella said about they want people to know. I mean, they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's the karma thing, isn't it? The unofficial elite karma theory, the Hebrew law, and what it is. It's like, oh God, how does that go again? Like, if I tie you to a chair in my basement and I leave the room and you die of hunger, I didn't kill you. That's kind of law.
Yeah, I see that too. It's just that, like, they go out of their way to lead us through the layers of the maze, it seems. Like,
well, for eyes to see and ears to hear, I guess.
Yeah, it's not as though they... What was the last thing?
It usually means them. It's probably the higher ones signalizing to the lower ones that you can be cool like us one day if you just, you know, do your Masonic levels.
Is that really how they would do it? Like, that there are...
I don't know, but...
Yeah. I mean, it almost makes it seem like those within the organization are like the groups at lower levels are themselves conspiracy theorists. Or yeah, whatever, another derogatory term. What?
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Many of them probably are. Because, I mean, you have to take an actual interest to get higher up. Because, like the guy I say, I worked for once, fairly old guy, he was... He proudly says that he was the highest degree Mason there was, 10th. And if you look it up in Norway, 10th is actually the highest degree, but, you know, within reason, right? But he's just a normal guy. He does normal stuff. He's not rich, not anything. So for him, that's probably the extent of his knowledge. I mean, we probably know more about Masons than he does. So, I mean, it's all about, you know, if you were a conspiracy theorist and related to Masonry, I'm sure you would climb the levels a lot faster and, you know, a lot higher. So, yeah, ears to hear and eyes to see. It's probably literal in that regard, even within their own ranks, if I'm making any sense at all.
It's just so hard to, like, imagine, like, I saw someone posted a video of, hold on. If anyone wants to play that, Mason, can you... Oh, maybe John. Somebody has the audio loop back into their
play video. The Nova Scotians been recommending that video.
It's quite a... I think it's good rap, but, I mean, it's surprising to watch.
Yeah, I don't have a way to play it right now. The ground leveler.
Well, they do meet on the level, not on the curve.
Did you see in that glitch? No, what, like electronic soundboard that is called Masonic or M4 Sonic weapon?
I did. Nice. I thought that might have been partly why you were sending it to me. Yeah, but I noticed that. The 4 replacing the A in Masonic.
And at the time, I had no idea.
At the time of what?
Like when I saw it first time. Sorry, is that?
No, I just said half the military stuff is names like this. Like the Templar tree is a Humvee and stuff like that.
Can you repeat that?
I said, like, I think it's a Templar tree or something that's a Humvee. So there's a, like this common naming amongst these things. Pretty much a big joke.
Are there any other groups that have the same... I ran across, like, Jokers or some other society that I would think would have some crossover into the mass media. Do you guys see any other?
I found a lodge out of England, I think, maybe out of London, that was like specifically an entertainment-based lodge. Like they had, I think the main guy in the band, Yes, is like a big Freemason. I put it all in the chat a while ago. I forgot exactly what the name of the lodge is. I'm gonna see if I can find it. But yeah, it was like Freemasonry specifically for actors and musicians.
I mean, that guy from Tool is a Freemason. He doesn't even hide it. And I mean, you can probably tell by music anyway.
Yeah, I'm wrong about Yes, I think. The name of that band. The guy would wear a cape and play the keyboard.
Oh, what, in Tool?
No. Okay, Rick Wakeman. Now I'll be able to figure it out. I looked back in the chat.
Anyhow, it's getting late, so I'm gonna pack up my stuff and leave the chat, so peace.
Have a good night.
Just a note about I'm looking at the Tool bandmates, and looks like the lead singer, I don't really remember this band that great, but James Herbert Keenan had in his picture at West Point, military uniform, sure. And related to other conversations I had today about DMSO, is dimethyl sulfoxide a medicine. It says here that Keenan's mother suffered a paralyzing cerebral aneurysm in 1976, when Maynard was 11, which would later serve as the inspiration for creative works, da 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 da. So, just wanted to mention that for cerebral aneurysms, or cerebral anything, like edema, or any brain damage, that this is a wonderful medicine, and if it could only have been available to this woman, or like people in riding in ambulances or just in their homes available to treat the brain damages, that would be very, very, very good. And if anyone out there wants to talk about this stuff, then by all means, come on to the Discord and hit me up.
Yeah, and I found it. It's Chelsea Lodge 3098. It was founded in 1905 by a group of artists and musicians. It's had people from ventriloquism, silent films, cinema, radio, television, circus, pantomime, comedy, magic. But yeah, the guy from Yes, the band Yes, Rick Wakeman, was, or maybe he currently is the grand poobah, grandmaster, whatever it is.
Any big name acts there?
I haven't found, I'm looking for like a Wikipedia on it or something so I can find a list of people that have been members. I don't see one right now. Here's I see a picture of Prince Charles at one of their functions. Yeah, shit. I don't know any of these people. Paul Mills, Roger Kidder, Mickey Travis, Mick Abrahams, Giles Cooper, Kim Joyce. I don't know, maybe they're popular on the other side.
And what was the name of the lodge?
Oh, it looks like Peter Sellers maybe was. That's a pretty huge name. That guy's majorly connected. The name of the lodge is Chelsea Lodge number 3098.
John mentioned Peter Sellers' movie. I don't remember which one, but he's also in Kubrick stuff.
Yeah, he's in Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, right, and I was looking for a movie that kind of showed the, like, I think he's in a movie, and they show the movie itself happening inside of the inside of a movie, and I guess I forget, it was one of Rob Ager collated learning analysis, like the first movie, right, to reveal the meaning of the monolith. So in the same way that I guess the monoliths that we today hold, having like the brick in the hand or the potato in the hand, having it kind of, I mean, I mentioned this earlier about the JFK, the 2001 predict, the Back to the Future predicts 9/11, the recent version in 2015, I think, it has the people taking the fabricated images on their own screen, and at the same time, there's another camera on the opposite side facing you, so, like, it'd be cool to see, like, a film that has the images that are made from the main camera facing away also appear, I guess, appear with your own face inside. I guess, like, that Casey Neistat Be Me or something, Beam, has some elements of that, like, that the media that you're participating is your own or something like that. You know what I'm talking about? The Beam app, Mason?
No, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, Clues Forum had a interesting take on Casey Neistat of questioning if he's a sim character. That was pretty cool to see. I had been watching his vlogs before. His office, I haven't seen it in a while, but that was how I originally found it. The guy's workspace is amazing.
Mm.
And he also has a selfie video of the monolith reveal, the Trade Center's getting taken down. So that's what gave him a spot in the Clues Forum. And he's a very promoted vlogger.
So his interpretation is that the monolith represents the Twin Towers or vice versa?
Well, he's definitely not. He's like the most exterior layer of the maze. He's like the new kind of CNN vlogger, So the monolith was like the Millennium Hotel, and when referring to the World Trade Center event or like 2001 the 9/11 event, I just kind of like tried to there default to it being called the monolith revealing. Like the connection is that the monolith is the screen, the phone, quote unquote, the phone, and then the app that he had face that he is the face of is an app that you take pictures of stuff like Snapchat, and then it like takes a picture of yourself at the same time. I think I'm sure I lost you. It's a whole other angle on the screen and the monolith.
Okay.
But yeah, like go back and see that video that John brought up that I sent him.
Yeah, I plan on checking it out. What was it called? Moon Keys?
Moon Key, yeah. Starmy from the sync genre.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Like I don't know, they're showing how the same actors play the same kind of roles and stuff like that.
There's a lot of videos
that I found connected to it, and it gets really it goes overboard with the idea that certain characters are doing exactly that. But
I feel like I've noticed things like that in, you know, just in my observations about different actors or, you know, different agendas, that reoccurring themes. So yeah, that's really interesting to me. I didn't know there was a genre of media to expose those kinds of things like that.
Yeah, it almost seemed to me like, because, you know, who's the guy? Freighter X, have you heard of him?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, he's... Okay, so it kind of like splits off the directions that somebody might go. I'm not sure how I kind of went the direction. I think it was like just because all the hoax events, and then I, you know, wanted to search into 9/11, and I think 9/11 is kind of like the... Yeah, I mean, that's like the first question here. So,
yeah, it's the epitome of hoax. I was thinking about that today, just like how it's like next level. Like, I don't know. It's the hoax to top all others.
And they don't really talk about it, I think, that much. You know, SGT report?
Nope. Are these YouTubes? I don't really get around YouTube a whole lot.
I mean, yeah, he's on there for sure. He's a bigger YouTuber guy. And then Freighter X, I don't think is, but he would go in a different slot or whatever of alt media, revelatory media, as I call it, groups.
Right.
And his appearances on like Vinnie Eastwood. Do you know Vinnie Eastwood?
Yeah, I've heard him a couple times.
Yeah, he has a lot of, or I haven't seen him, I haven't watched any of his stuff in a while. But anyway, Freighter X is one of the, types of, one of the guests. I think he overlaps onto, I started to watch again the, Mark Passio. They did a conference together, Free Your Mind, I think. Have you heard of Mark Passio?
Yeah, is he the one that was the ex Satanist, or was that a different guy?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, I've seen a few of the Free Your Mind videos or whatever, and that's all I've seen of Passio is the Free Your Mind stuff.
I think Michael Tessarian did that. Michael Tessarian was one of the researchers that I watched a lot of stuff or listened to a lot of his audios from, like, Red Ice. How do you like Red Ice? You must have heard of Red Ice.
Yeah, I never really checked it out, I don't think, other than maybe an episode or two, like, in the last year or so. I don't know. It seemed too political for me. I don't get into politics.
Yeah, it was like more the mythology stuff that I was into at the time, and Michael Tessarian was one of the older guests at that point, and it was like back in 2014, I think. He was really did like a couple of hours at a time, and like five different shows covering. I mean, but I guess, you know, it's now kind of a little bit not only passé, but revealed in the sense that like it's not. It's not on the same level that I had once looked at it, but, you know, a lot of worthwhile analysis, and I liked his, Atlantis stuff kind of, but anyway, back to my original point about, the sync genre of, looking at the, meaning behind, things like the numerology. I don't think there's a lot of numerology, that I see on Clues Forum, for example, but in the sync stuff, where Freighter X was like on Vinnie Eastwood, and he was on the Free Your Mind with Mark Passio, and he's on that sync website, syncbook.com probably, and like there would probably be some overlap between, because Freighter X was, I'm trying to think of who kind of gets into into like fakeologist territory. Not sure, but anyway, so the video kind of accounts there seem to have a lot of this movie analysis that shows a lot of these characters, these actors being, or I don't know, character actors or actor characters, yeah, these actor characters having a overlap between films, and that being, I guess, part of their genre over there of very, very thorough pattern matching across Hollywood-esque movies.
Would the guy from Fast and Furious dying, you know, in a fiery car wreck, would that be considered a sink?
Terminology? Exactly. Except they wouldn't go into looking at it as fake. They would only go in a similar way, but not complete in the exploration of what it means in a numerological or, I mean, but like it's incomplete if you only look at it in that way, because that it is fake and that like maybe there being some way to get behind it of, I don't know. I mean, there's multiple angles to get a full picture, but I don't think I really have it. But I don't know. I mean, it's just that they don't have it as fake, and then
they don't provide a picture though. You're saying or a reference. I don't know, a way of looking at it. They're just giving you the data as they see it.
And they're saying that it aligns with I don't know some. I mean, some astronaut.
Okay. Yeah, it's some kind of grand coincidence. It's the universe at play.
Well, yeah, but it's, I guess it kind of bridges it in that way when you say that the universe is aligning and all these events are happening in the way, as well as humans are cosmic participants. So in the same way as, some planets having a syzygy, like aligning together, in the same way. If a human can successfully engineer a building to collapse on a particular day and time, in accordance with some other astronomical significance that they have in their minds as they do it, it's similarly, at least the way that I look at it, you know, kind of a cosmic event, in that this is part of the cosmos here. Might have gone off track, but yeah, they don't look at it as human. Engineering. They look only as if it's cosmic coincidences. The two paths diverge between conspiracy theory and coincidence theory.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure I would end up disagreeing with their final conclusion. But yeah, it sounds like a wealth of good information just for to then apply your own analysis to. These weird media coincidences, if to call it something. Do they, would they include, say, the show from CBS, like 2001, the agency that was aided by the CIA and, had tons of predictive programming, including an anthrax attack, like weeks before the actual so-called anthrax started getting mailed out in 2001. Would they even go so far as to consider that a coincidence? I mean, even with the admitted CIA connection in a CIA show, you know, it's.
Yeah, I think if it gets into those three letters, they exclude it from their analysis.
Yeah, so yeah, that makes sense.
I think it would be similar, though. Like, I'm trying to think of parallels right now, and the one that stands out is as like kind of a crossover. I guess they're called cultural crossovers. Is that they made that Sync book. And it covers a lot of this that we're talking about. And then in the same way, Jay Dyer has Esoteric Hollywood, and then Jamie Hanshaw has Weird Stuff and weird stuff too, I think. And then those are like books you find on Amazon or at some bookstore or such, and they are like thorough presentations of a lot of info, and it's in a book format, just to kind of like take a bridge if it's available. I mean, you could always say that somebody makes a really good YouTube video and then what someone else does, so call it that.
Yeah, it's the information kind of comes out, I guess, like I was saying about the Fox putting out a moon hoax documentary in February 2001. Like, is that like a revelation? Or, you know, what's the goal there of Rupert Murdoch doing that?
It's interesting. What's the goal? Like, as if it is Rupert Murdoch's goal? Like, as if he's, like, outside of...
Yeah, I don't know. I tend to think, like, him, the CFR, whatever, like, they've pretty much got control over the lineup for the week and what agendas are going through, and there's no way that just, like, slipped by. I don't know of anything else like it other than I've heard recently about some 9/11 documentary that got played on mainstream TV in Australia, but it's just kind of always perplexed me that's where I heard about NASA fakery.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
I think that might, you might call that like kicking things into high gear, maybe, for something to appear with like 9/11 type stuff. Because the moon hoax one is a little bit more accessible
it kind of helped. I think it added to my suspicion of 9/11, having seen that 6 months earlier, like being pretty damn certain that the government, you know, pulls illusions over on people. And it does kind of make me wonder if, yeah, there was 9/11 intention behind it on some level.
Yeah, for sure. In the NASA, fakery department, I remember reading about the Hubble telescope images being colored and thinking, oh my God, are you kidding me? So you guys are giving us these images without telling us that you're practically, you know, making them what we see. Like, it might as well all be fake. Oh, even better than that, I remember going to Abe Lincoln's bedrooms, like some tour in, I don't know, maybe it was Washington, D.C. or somewhere. And like, I was really young, and they were saying that this is a preserved scene from his own home with all his stuff, except the pillow. Or in the other one, it was except the bed frame. And it's like, we kept everything the same, exactly as it was, but the only thing that's different is the pillow. And I'm thinking, like, okay, you're going out of your way to tell me that. You could have just, you know, mentioned it. You could have mentioned none of that. Like, it's all real. It's all fake. Whatever. You could have said anything you wanted, and I would have, you know, been none the wiser to, you know, I don't have any way of looking at it anything. But why are you telling me that this one's fake? I mean, everything might as well be fake at that point. And like, they want...
Yeah, they it's like a sleight of hand or something. They get you looking at one thing, and... Yeah, so you're not catching what they're really trying to obfuscate, right?
Well, no, I mean it like the magician who talks about magic as his act. Like, I really like this one video with Hannibal doing the cups. I'll put a link. It's one of my recent interests is in magicians. Well, anyway, the point about it is that
he's describing the nature of the trick. It's like he could just say, you know, I'm going to put this ball here, and you won't know where it is, and I'm going to move it over here, and like that's the trick. You've been tricked. It's done. Instead, he says that, you know, I'm doing this age old trick, and you know you're none the wiser of the nature of the magic, and you know he's talking about magic while he's doing the trick. So the nature of the trick becomes to reveal that trickery is the human fascination or the human experience, or as Chris says, that trickery is the guiding hand or the guiding force behind the social world that we live in. And then in the tour of Abe Lincoln's stuff, it's like we're giving you a tour of what you would have no way of knowing is real. So we're going to mention at the same time that we're tricking you, but you know everything else is not a trick. So you know, on Fox they'll show you the 9/11 or you know tapes, but in the same it's just going to go right into the 10 o'clock news. The same, you know, it's going to air right after the 10 o'clock news. So, it's, you know, the same channel that they release some info, they don't stop releasing the other disinfo.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a cognitive dissonance that is forced upon you.
Yeah, I bet that anyone going through this, I mean, myself included, has a lot of, at certain points, you know, turns that they're either willing or unwilling to make about, was this a lie? Was that a lie? You know, you have to, like, I mean, I know I did a lot of this, retracing my steps and analyzing who said what. I feel like I'm a detective. Who said what to who? And you know, going back over my spiral notebook, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's where I'm at now. Have you been tracing back any steps lately, Mason?
I've been looking at Nuke stuff. I wouldn't say I ever really bought into Nukes in the first place, but I've just been looking at like the old propaganda films and trying to analyze the trickery and just the propaganda messages of them. I came across one the other night. It's called The House in the Middle. I think it was from 1954. And they have three, like, shed. They're about the size of a shed, but they're supposed to represent a full-size home in three different levels of repair. there's one with a fence that's they say is rotting, and there's like some newspapers and trash by it, and you know, one that's halfway kept up, and then a house that's well painted and clean on the inside. And you hear it's put out by this organization called like the cleanup foundation or something like, you hear the narrator and he's like, you see homes like this in every town in America. They just don't seem to care about their yard. And there's unsightly rubbish lining the fence. And, So they supposedly set off a nuke, and of course the camera's not facing the explosion. The so-called explosion comes from the rear, and you see all three houses, and two of the fences appear to start catch fire. But you see, like, there's this weird lighting effect that takes place during that scene where it's like, it seems like they did some stop, either cutting out frames or stop-go animation his defense just like deteriorates at this rate. That doesn't make any sense. Like it's over a span of like 30 seconds, and all of a sudden just a whole panel will disappear, and then another panel, and it's not the way fire happens. But so in the end, the house that's, they say it's just painted with ordinary household paint. That one doesn't catch fire, and it's got clean inside. They say the tables are kept clean or something. Like there's just the Bible on the table compared to the other house that had a newspaper or something. So yeah, the moral of the propaganda film was if you take care of your home, you're gonna help survive nuclear apocalypse.
It reminds me of when I was watching the making of Terminator 2, and even the scene with the nuke in Terminator 2 itself, it looked so like in your face, fake. Like the buses, the town, whatever, it's all miniature, like you guys had the other day. It's just so obvious. I was like, you guys could do this so much better. And you're not. There's something off about it. Like that they went out of their way to show a making of that scene, even as well, like with the people making the miniature sets. And I'm thinking, like, that doesn't even look like you're putting in a whole lot of effort into making the illusion on screen. You're just kind of like half-assing it here. Why? And then, we get now to the point where it's like even the original. nuke footage was fake, so it's kind of like I think one of those, watch my hand as I do a sleight of hand trick kind of messages. It's all propaganda, though. The Terminator 2, the making of Terminator 2, the original Laurel Canyon footage, or this film. There's all kind of setting up stuff, like I don't know. Can you post?
It kind of creates a whole new reality because I don't think nukes exist.
Yeah. I watched 70,000 tons, like 70,000 like megatons. It's not an absurd amount of TNT stacked to like there was no. Nothing in view of scale to measure it, but it looked like maybe the size of a warehouse, or not really, even like 10 times as big of dynamite, all stacked up. And I had to search this out, to like answer my own nagging question of like if the bomb, if the big bomb is itself fake, are there still explosions that can mimic it, at least,
Yeah, did you see the videos I put at the end of that Nuke Hoax miniature post that were from different air shows where they did quote-unquote simulated nuclear explosions where they created a mushroom cloud for the spectators?
No, but it's again that, but...
Yeah, so I mean, they don't even need stacks upon stacks of dynamite to create at least a smaller mushroom cloud. But yeah, I've seen those photos of the mountain, the desert stacking those crates.
No radiation toxicity required.
Well, I hear that any explosion creates some kind of radioactivity. I don't know if that's true or not, but so even the bombing, say, of Hiroshima or something, like you could still go with a Geiger counter, I guess, and get some kind of reading that would now be higher since there were some kind of explosions there, even though they weren't of the nuclear kind.
That is a fantastic piece of thought you've had there, not so Freemason.
Oh, which one? I've got a lot
about
of
the about an explosion results in Geiger counters doing their thing. I'm going to have to check that now.
Well, you're putting out a whole bunch of
matter that has itself a lot of energy. I mean, it was fire energy.
I've talked about this before. I'm pretty sure it was you and I. Like it might have been the other fellow, but the idea that radioactive material is made radioactive by just having energy pumped into it. But
that kind of goes along with who was that Dave J who was saying something about resonating frequencies.
But that wasn't the fellow that came up with it. I thought it was you and I had it. I'll have to backtrack it now. But anyway, that the idea, because we know that when they say that a radioactive explosion induces radioactivity in other bits around it, nonetheless, I still think what you've just said is pretty revolutionary. I actually was, years ago, a drill and blast engineer, and the biggest blast I did was a million tons of rock in one blast. You know, if I'd had a Geiger counter then, we could have found out all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I didn't take into account, that you do mining.
Yeah, I haven't, that's not true. The last blast I was involved in was about 8 years ago. It was pretty enormous. But, I wasn't into this stuff then, so it wouldn't have occurred to me to have a Geiger counter on site. But a great thought.
Do you guys know if there's a good proof of, what's the nuclear power plant that Japan, in 2000, Fukushima, do you guys have any good info on if that was a hoax as well?
No.
Not proof of it, but it seems, I assume it to be a hoax, the way that they were, like Alex Jones. I was listening to Alex Jones back then, and he was saying how it was, the fallout was coming across the ocean as we speak in California, and then it was going to spread, and I don't know.
And we're all going to be doomed, and nothing happened.
Yeah.
But nothing. I mean, that's quite a while ago now, that incident, isn't it?
Yeah, but they still say stuff. Well, I don't know. I haven't seen anything recently. I haven't been following anything. I think I even had a tracker on that. I found that really jarring. And the things that they talk about of having to excavate tons and tons of hundreds of tons or thousands of tons of contaminated soil, and then pack that soil somewhere, and just crazy shit. Robots. Oh no, I just saw one today. That a robot had just uncovered the location of the reactor tubes that had melted, to some weird, some destroyed subterranean spot. It's just so ugly.
Yeah, and even the robots can't take the radiation. They, after a while, they're burned out as well. It's tricky.
But it does make sense that it would have been. I think there were some signs that that they had already shut down the reactors or something.
Well, it was shut down when the thing went off. They've acknowledged that.
Or that they had, a lot of prep work going into the event itself. So they would have. I don't know.
Etc. Anyway, I think it's the usual thing. No one has actually. And I'm happy to eat fish. Fish is cheap because of it. So good.
Well, not good if it's actually radioactive.
It's not radioactive. That's what I'm saying. So people don't buy it.
You got a Geiger counter these days?
I just don't think any of that is. Radioactivity is just simply exactly what it says. It's radiation coming off in the form of electromagnetic waves.
Yeah, and then until you digest it and clear it, it's
But it's not something you can digest, is all I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, you could certainly incorporate that. I mean, that's why you have to have. I mean, I don't know.
Well, let's say the barium meal idea, right?
Barium what?
People have barium meals to provide a radioactive trace of their intestines.
Oh, yeah, right.
So people ingest radioactive materials just as part of a normal day to day?
No. That's part of like a once in a, not even a blue moon, hopefully, type of situation.
But the idea that somehow it's going to lead to death, I think, is just totally overplayed, is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I get you, but you wouldn't eat that barium tracer on a regular basis.
I guess not, but only because you wouldn't like to have my stomach on a regular basis.
What?
Because radiation, effectively, is just micro... X-rays are the same form as a light beam.
Yeah, but it's destructive.
It makes water do things, and you know you don't want to get involved. But the point I'm trying to make is it's not any more dangerous than any ultraviolet or it's a type of radiation that burns, stings, does whatever it does. The damage it does. It's electromagnetic radiation. It's disturbance of the ether. It's not any.
I just put a PDF in the live stream chat. It's from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. It's called Electromagnetic Waves from TNT Explosions.
Yeah.
It says experimental observations indicate that electromagnetic radiation is emitted after the detonation of high explosive charges.
Oh, okay. Brilliant. Well done.
And yeah, it says in 1990, Boronin published a review article on the physical mechanisms of electromagnetic field generation created by the detonation of condensed explosive charges. They proposed that the mechanism for radiation generation by an explosion is associated with the process of acceleration or retardation of certain electron groups in an ionized air layer on the shock front.
Okay.
All right.
Good enough for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny because they're also the ones saying that they set up nuclear bomb testing, I think. So, I mean, if they're believable on this, then what else are they also believable on? I don't know. It's just that's kind of funny that there's no parsing in between what kind of things they say.
The point I'm making is they're really telling you that when they set those bombs off in the desert, in 1944 or 45 or whenever it was, they measured electromagnetic radiation. Now what they're telling you is you get the same effect from TNT. You couldn't be more clear cut, could you?
No, I think that kind of fits with what we were talking about earlier, maybe.
Yeah.
This statement is a lie.
Which statement is a lie?
This statement is a lie. I'm lying right now. I'm telling you a lie.
And so you're just talking about the logical, are you?
Say again?
You're talking about a logical non sequitur. I don't think what you said applies is analogous to what's going on here.
So that one, what I told you there wasn't a lie, but this statement about that one is that it was a lie. So it's
the point I'm trying to make here, and I think that not so Freemason has elegantly pointed out, is that much of the fear and the proof, if you like, that nuclear explosions exist comes from the existence of radiation and background radiation.
Yeah, I believe that because it makes sense to me. But I'm saying
let's come back another step. Then he's found clear evidence that TNT explosions produce exactly the same radiation that's observed in putative nuclear explosions. So whatever damage can occur to you in a nuclear explosion can also result, even if it's from radiation, from a normal explosion. So there is no way, in other words, now there is no way to differentiate between a nuclear explosion and a TNT explosion. We don't have any discerning mechanism anymore.
My point was about Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, though. It was like...
but nonetheless...
Sure.
I would be able to, and that's the point I was trying to make before, go to an explosion with a Geiger counter, and if my Geiger counter goes off, I think I've confirmed not-so-Freemason's point and this paper.
His paper comes from the same people who did the original...
You're missing the point I'm making.
I'm not making a point about radiation. I'm not making a point about radiation.
If I have a Geiger counter, right, which basically picks up these forms of radiation, then I will be able to, if this Lawrence Livermore paper is correct, then I should be able to detect an increase in radiation as a result of a normal ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosion. So
what both of you guys are saying. Phil, what Phil's saying is, can we trust them, or maybe
I'm saying it's ironic
that it's from the same people, but I think what you're saying, Frank, is that you can actually test this, whereas
yes.
we can't create a nuke in our basement, but
that
you actually do you are around explosions and you could.
Unfortunately, I'm not around explosions anymore because I'm making sure I'll be able to get one of my friends to do a measurement. Yeah, and we'll work out a way to do so. Because this paper, Phil, is something that we could look for the results from.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested to check up on what they're saying of something that obviously...
And in fact, we probably can do it from any kind of explosion. For example, a Brown's gas explosion. Brown's gas is the mixture of gases you get when you... electrolyze a solution of water with bicarbonate, and you split the oxygen and hydrogen and kick them together in a gas.
Do you use a water electrolyzer? I don't know anything about this type of explosion, but in terms of a tool for healthy drinking water or other not drinking water per se, but like just it's a curative healing water. Do you use that?
For the most of the water I drink is either rainwater that I catch or it's distilled.
Cool.
But I also use a machine called a Grander water treatment system. I use that for my boiler, which is a bit of new age hokey-pokey stuff that works.
What is it? What type of machine?
It's called a Grander water treatment system. Do you want me to give you a link?
Yeah, please.
And I use that on a high temperature. And it's this technology is much mocked in the world.
It's what?
It's mocked.
Okay. Yeah, great. It's a sign of something interesting.
And but I use this technology at my to look after the boiler that we've operated successfully for years now, several years. And it works. It just does the job. So, in other words, this particular device, they say, structures water in a way that I don't need to use oxygen scavengers and so on in the boiler water. It's pretty wild.
The machine that I use uses the same concept you were just talking about a second ago of applying electricity and separating the mineral water into two different positive and negatively charged streams of water. And,
okay, that's a different technology to what I'm... Yeah.
Yeah, no, but you mentioned before this
technology. That's the creation of Brown's gas. That's by using electrolysis to split hydrogen and oxygen in water.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so with this machine, which is like a commonly sold... the one I got was like $500. You drink water that has hydrogen in it, and the benefit of that is that the free oxygen radicals, reactive oxidative.
I know exactly the one you're talking about. I've never drunk the water yet. It is the same technology. You're right.
Yeah, and in the Discord server that we are in, otherwise, you can see a whole bunch of research as to why it's worth drinking that water.
Okay. So the guy that I know about that produces those machines is George, is it George Wiseman? Aquacure. Is that the one you're talking about?
I don't know any of the brands that you would see. Kangen is the only international brand, I think.
Okay.
You heard of that one, Kangen?
No, I'll have to have a look. But I'll link the one that I know about.
Well, I don't know. I'm not trying to, recommend them. I don't even think that they have anything really worthwhile even in their marketing material because they talk about it as a alkaline water, not just even in terms of the mineral content, but in the simple, pH measure, but that's irrelevant to the role that it has within the body, so I don't even think that I would link to Kangen.
Okay.
But they have the most prominent name in the in of those who make this tool, so
okay. All right, I better bow out. I was just very fascinated by the comment you made, not so Freemason, about and that paper you found on the electromagnetic waves from TNT. Really interesting.
Cool. Yeah, I hope it. Hope you can apply it to your your real world.
Well, I think it just now makes a lot of sense about how the nuclear thing is being pulled off. You know, about this radiation thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely one of the legs to the table.
Yeah, because how do you explain radiation if stuff?
Don't you guys hate it when somebody asks you a question like that, as I had been, and you don't have an answer? Don't you just hate that?
Yeah.
I didn't have anything to say when my friend said, well, then how do you explain the radiation?
Yeah, it's really an important contribution. And all the stuff is out there, isn't it?
Yeah, you can trust it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Mason.
All right, thanks very much for allowing me to barge in on your conversation. Take care, guys.
Hey, have a good one.
See you, Frank.
All right, I'm going to go exploring, I guess. I don't know. You got any other buttons?
No. I'm just going to
finger on the button there.
And see if Chris does a call.
Yeah, that'd be cool. If you're going to hang out, maybe I'll leave the chat open or something, or just mute. I'll go on mute.
Maybe I'll play the audio for the from that the house in the middle. It's pretty funny just to listen to.
Yeah, cool. I'll keep that on.
All right, so this is the house in the middle, the audio from the propaganda video from 1954, produced by the National Cleanup, Paint Up, and Fix Up Bureau. In conjunction with the Lookout Mountain and all the regular players.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. One American town looks like any other when you see it from an airplane window. Trees line the quiet residential streets, and there's usually a highway running through to an industrial area where many town people work. But in every town, you'll find houses like this, run down, neglected. Trash and litter disfigure the house and yard. An eyesore, yes, and as you'll see, much more. A house that's neglected is the house that may be doomed in the atomic age. What would happen to such a town if it were on the outer fringe of an attack directed at a nearby city? We can answer that question, in part at least, even though it hasn't happened yet. A series of civil defense tests were made to discover the effects of atomic heat on American homes. I am going to show you how protective measures can help guard your home against the heat effects of an atomic explosion. This This is the Nevada Proving Ground, where tests were made on miniature houses in various stages of upkeep, inside and out. These tests were also made on common fire hazards like dead grass, old leaves, discarded newspapers, and fence structures. Here are five fences placed far enough from the explosion that they could survive the blast. The fences in the middle are built of decayed wood. Dry grass and litter simulate conditions you've seen in too many alleys and backyards in slum areas. The trash, litter, and dead grass are perfect kindling for the unprotected and unpainted wood of the fence itself. The moments tick away as we await the bomb and the fireball.
We're going to burn those people in the slum.
The light flash and the heterothermal wave, then the blast wave. You remember the three middle fences are built of rotten wood, unpainted and surrounded by trash. They are immediately ignited. The two outer fences, without litter, are slower to ignite. Decayed, combustible wood surfaces like these fences are readily ignited by heat flash. Likewise, some types of interiors are easily ignited. This will be demonstrated in the next test. Here are two miniature frame houses, identical in structure, both in good condition and well painted outside. Sturdily mounted cameras in front of the houses are to record the effect of heat flash. Large windows purposely expose the interiors to the flash.
Well, at least they tried to explain why the camera doesn't move. It was mounted sturdily. Now we know.
In the house on the right, all the earmarks of untidy housekeeping. Newspapers and magazines lying about. And cluttered tables. Now the house on the left, identical to the other, but spick and span. Trash has been thrown away. Tabletops are tidy. Two homes, one a fire trap, even under ordinary conditions. The other cleaned up and fresh with better, safer housekeeping. Both ready for the test bomb. The light flash and the heat wave, then the blast.
They just cut to a completely different shot. They had one lineup of the houses, then the flash, and they cut to a completely different angle and everything on these models.
There's away part of each roof. Let's see it again in stop motion. First, the light flash and the thermal or heat wave that only charred the painted outer surface of both houses. Then the blast. The cluttered room of the house on the right bursts into flame. In a few moments, the interior is completely ablaze. The fire that started inside spreads rapidly to the house itself, although the house on the left still shows no exterior flames. Now the house on the right burns as fiercely as if it had been deliberately fired with kindling. The lack of fire-safe housekeeping has doomed this house to destruction.
Only as if it had been fired with kindling. Not that it was, of course.
In the other house, with its better, safer housekeeping, readily extinguished afterward. Damage? Yes, but the house still stands. One house standing, one house leveled, both painted and cleaned up outside. Identical houses, except for inside conditions and housekeeping. Now, our third test. Three identical miniature frame houses, each with varying exterior conditions, all the same distance from the point of the explosion. The house on the right, an eyesore. But you've seen these same conditions in your own hometown. Old, unpainted wood.
You know the part of town.
And look at the paper, leaves, and trash in the yard. In a moment, you'll see the results of atomic heat flash on this house. The house on the left, typical of many homes across the nation. Heavily weathered, dry wood in run-down condition. This house is the product of years of neglect. It has not been painted regularly. It's dry and rotten. A tinderbox ready to turn into a blazing torch. The house in the middle, in good condition, with a clean, unlittered yard. The exterior has been painted with ordinary, good quality house paint. Light painted surfaces reflect heat, and the paint also protects the wood from weathering and moisture damage.
It's just ordinary house paint.
Let's watch the test now and see what happens under atomic heat. See it again in stop motion. The light flash, the heat wave, and clouds of dust. Keep your eye on the house on the right. Notice how the heat wave affects it. There's a fire starting in the trash surrounding the house. Now, it spreads to the house itself. In a moment, the blast wave, and here it comes. The house on the right is the first to ignite. The trash serves as kindling for the dry, weathered wood. The house on the left smolders for a few moments, looks almost as if it will not burn, and then bursts into flame. The house on the right continues to burn. Two houses are a total loss, but the well-kept and painted house in the middle still stands. Which of these is your house? This one? The house on the right? Dilapidated with paper, dead grass, litter everywhere. The house on the left? Unpainted, run down, neglected. Is this your house? The house in the middle, cleaned up, painted up, and fixed up, exposed to the same searing atomic heat wave, did not catch fire. Close examination revealed only a slight charring of the painted outer surface.
Two of the houses are burnt completely to the ground. The house in the middle, with the ordinary household paint, doesn't even look charred. It's completely white with a little bit of soot.
Yes, the White House in the middle survived an atomic heat flash. These civil defense tests have proven how important upkeep is to our houses and towns. Now it's up to us, the people, to take decisive action. All right, you say, what can I do about it? What can my community do? All over America, towns and cities are organizing local clean-up, paint-up, fix-up campaigns. Boy and Girl Scouts and school children of all ages are told how they can help by organizing teams to clean up alleys and backyards. See that you help by removing all of the litter, junk, old newspapers, and trash. They collect and pile up. Your community needs this help. Do those long-delayed repair jobs now. Prep.
Get off your lazy ass.
Your shrubbery and trees, weed and plant flowers. Keep your block cleaned up. Beauty, cleanliness, health, and safety are the four basic doctrines that protect our homes, our cities. You've seen the tests. You know the story.
But do you believe it?
Sign up with your friends and neighbors for a better, safer community. It's also a good civil defense, which is everyone's responsibility. The dingy house on the left, the dirty and littered house on the right, or the clean white house in the middle. It is your choice. The reward may be survival.
And That was a selection from the National Cleanup, Paint-Up, and Fix-Up Bureau.
I need to get
titled The House in the Middle from 1954 for all fakeologists listening pleasure.
How's it going, Mason? Hello?
Oh, shit. Hey, James.
Can you hear me?
I hear you, brother.
Yeah, man. I need to get me one of them sturdy mounts for my camera. It sounds like it can withstand a heat flash and the shockwave of a nuclear blast. So I'm wondering where I can buy one of those.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the way that they're made, though, you can only face them away from explosions. The explosion has to occur at the rear of the mount.
So I couldn't like go and photograph a volcano that was blowing up right in front of me with that thing. Like remotely, like I would be standing far away, but I could put my camera right on the edge of a volcano. And it sounds like it might last for a little while until the lava came over it, of course, but
yeah, that video, man, kills me.
It's a good piece. It's a good piece of classic American propaganda. And what I really like about it is how it's really just promoting like home improvement products, like, you know, fresh paint and go get yourself some new siding, you know, clean up your neighborhood. It's more, it's like more about promoting this pristine suburban American ideal.
Yeah, raise property values.
Yes.
And yeah, maybe it helped create that pristine kind of image of the 50s that we're given. Like maybe that aided it in some way. People scared to leave a tricycle out in the backyard, you know, with fear of destruction.
Yeah. That old house that your grandparents built from the Dust Bowl era, you gotta tear that down. This is the new America.
Or at least slap some paint on it.
Yeah, you gotta get you some vinyl siding, some aluminum siding maybe. Get rid of all those old newspapers you've been hoarding, that grandma's been hoarding in the attic. They don't make them like they used to, I'll tell you that much. I wish we had such great propaganda these days. It's just not. Something about the stuff from that era is just so classy. Like, it's really good.
Yeah, they didn't have to jazz it up with too many bells and whistles. They kind of got straight to the point.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Now people need Brad Pitt in their propaganda piece to really get them, get their juices flowing.
Now it's more about curtailing your consumption, I guess. That was the era of like embracing your consumerism. But now it's like, no, you got to dial it back. You got to be conservative with your consumer habits. Be eco-friendly.
Yeah, you'll be safe in your Target town skyscraper. Right. Solid. They build them solid. Just don't fly an airplane into them.
Are those real live crickets? Do you got crickets going on over there?
I got more frog sounds.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard crickets for a second.
If you hear them, I got my mic sensitivity too low. Yeah, I like to put it low when I'm, trying to play clips. It sounded like it was coming through all right.
Yeah, it was decent. Yeah, it faded out a few times, but not too bad.
Okay.
Are you on a phone or a tablet?
Yeah, phone.
Yeah, I think it it just works better from like a laptop or a desktop when you're playing clips through Discord.
Well, I was playing it on my computer and then had my phone near the speaker.
Oh, okay.
You have a way of playing it through your computer into Discord, like seamlessly?
There's nothing extra I have to do when I just, you know, if I open YouTube or a sound file or anything, it just comes through Discord automatically. I don't need any.
It's not coming through your speakers and then your mic into Discord. It just plays through Discord.
Yep, it's just through the internal sound.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's what because of my settings or my particular system, but it seems to work pretty well.
Yeah, like if I play a YouTube video while I'm in a chat, it half mutes both channels, the Discord and the volume on the YouTube video, and like I hear both, but the people on the Discord don't hear my YouTube.
Yeah, sometimes I'll have to turn the sensitivity, adjust that a little bit for whatever I'm playing, but it usually works good. So I don't know if, I think that's just a feature of Discord. It just grabs whatever audio is coming through your driver. I'm talking like I actually know what I'm talking about, but I don't.
Yeah, if I ever want to play some more clips, I might go that route, just download the PC version, do a little faux agenda.
Yep.
You been looking at anything interesting lately?
No, I've been off the webs for a little while. Just getting back on. I haven't looked at the news actually recently, so I don't know. I heard about some shooting in California. Saw some blurb about that, but pretty disconnected.
I'm out of the loop on all those other than links people throw in the chat. About whatever the new mass, whatever shooting, car smashing, whatever. But yeah, well, it's too many to keep up with. And
I was talking.
They're not pulling the numbers. It's like you got to at least pop 30 heads, you know, before you get my attention nowadays.
Yeah, and I see we got Charles Manson just died or whatever, and. So talking about current events, I was talking to a friend of mine and we both agreed that it's kind of strange that all this sexual harassment stuff is coming out now. Because, you know, it's like obviously people who are aware of how the world works know that this type of thing has been going on for a long time and it's just not talked about, but suddenly now it's okay for some reason for all the media to be talking about it. And I said to him, like, well, I think it might be part of a distraction, you know, the media is always there to keep us distracted with this or that. So there could be things going on.
You don't think there's social programming, like, directly coming from from all these stories?
Well, that too,
of course. It's a distraction for something else.
I mean, it could be, but, you know, of course there is this agenda of forwarding, furthering the social agenda about gender roles and all this stuff and what is acceptable behavior and what's not.
Yeah, it kind of seems to fit, in that column. I'd agree.
Just where you have these liberal
confusion, like how are you supposed to behave? How do you interact with people? Like,
So you have these liberal guys like these Louis C.K.'s and Al Franken who will capitulate and apologize, and then these other guys like Roy Moore who will deny all accusations, right? Who, you know, Roy Moore is more the like Southern conservative, not liberal guy.
Oh, that's a new one to me. I don't know that one.
But it's like, no, dude, you're all scumbags. But it's just how, I guess, What am I trying to say here? It's like, why should we give a shit if Al Franken apologizes? Why should we give a shit if Louis C.K. apologizes? To me, it's utterly meaningless and stupid. But, you know, people still put a lot of stake and have a lot of stake in what the media is telling them. So be like, oh, yeah, that's great. Good for him, or, you know, whatever. It's... Yeah, so now Sarah Silverman gets to respond to Louis C.K. I'm sure you know Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, she's atrocious.
A real piece of work. Victims, the only people who matter. Should I just go play this clip here? We'll see what she has to say.
My wish house, we call it the wish house. And it just immediately brought
something. Oh, God, now it's an advertisement. I can't mute it.
Oh, got to get up, get Matthew on his treatment.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to play that because it's an ad right before.
Did she have to get Matthew on his treatment?
He had to get Matthew on his treatment.
It's not that bad. He makes the best of everything, and he teaches us to be strong, brave, too.
Yeah.
The Subaru Shares Love event. We've helped grant the wishes of 1,500 kids so far.
Oh,
get
Subaru.
A Subaru, and we'll donate $250 more to help those in need.
We'll get those kids vaccinated today.
Thanks, Subaru.
The Louis C.K. situation, too, yes. Which has impacted the comedic world. Certainly Sarah Silverman, who is friends with Louis C.K., yes. Had this to say. This is her reaction.
I love but Louis did these things. Both of those statements are true. So I just keep asking myself, can you love someone who did bad things? Can you still love them? I can mull that over later, certainly, because the only people that matter right now are the victims.
And clearly this is hitting home for some of these people. That was a very sober moment.
Yes, it is. And I've met Sarah Silverman, and she's usually, you know, very upbeat. So for her to take on this issue, deals with her good friends.
That's like saying Daria was indeed. Upbeat.
And something yeah, that's interesting
she's
on
so upbeat.
She mentioned something that has been mentioned to me by friends of mine, saying, can I still like Louis C.K., or can I still like Kevin Spacey for the things yeah. that they have done? Can I still watch their movies or watch their work? And it's a tough issue that everybody, not just Sarah Silverman, is having to grapple with now. Do I...
You know, oh, she's grappling with issues.
Not just oh, the people, that's so, cute. So it's like an internal struggle. And it's really interesting that she brought that up.
Is it it's not an internal struggle for me because I don't think Louis C.K. is funny. I used to when I was 13 and he was, you know, doing stand up on Conan O'Brien, then I thought he was funny. But in his latest incarnation, like, he's got some real pretty sick material out there. And yeah, I don't think he's funny, so it's not an internal struggle for me. Like, I don't like him, and I don't like him even more now because of what I've heard. And the fact that CNN is on here just saying, you know, well, just even promoting this idea, like, well, should we still like some of these people, you know? I mean, some of their stuff is pretty funny, but then you've got this other stuff that's, you know, kind of creepy, but maybe we can just overlook that in the interest of just having a good time, you know, having a good laugh. Because that's kind of what we've been doing anyway. We've been just ignoring all this stuff and not even talking about it, so.
It seems to kind of match up with the political sphere, too. You know, we got this Twitter reality television president who, you know, they've got all these claims of him saying grabbing pussy and, you know, like,
right.
I don't know. It seems to go right along with that, with this people doing things that are socially unacceptable. And
yeah,
it just seems like all one big narrative.
That's the trend I've noticed, actually, is we're being conditioned to accept things that were previously socially unacceptable through the music, through entertainment, comedy, in particular comedy. But as far as like the level of violence that was shown on TV, the level of sexuality, the vulgarity of language, in all the media has only gone become more and more gross over the last few decades, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's part of that whole arc, that whole cycle of influences, like this, you know, breaking down what was previously unacceptable and making it acceptable.
But I don't know if they want to make, you know, sexual harassment or sexual assault normal. Like,
well, it already is normal. It's just now that they're talking about it.
Well, yeah, it's definitely, I guess, the norm in Hollywood. Or, yeah, you're right. Like, as far as that goes.
I guess it's hard to say, like, where it's going, you know, what the end goal is with this whole thing.
Yeah, I noticed, around 2000 or something, like, it was like the comedy, everything had projectile vomit in it. Every comedy movie had someone, like,
right,
vomiting 20 feet across the room or... You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, everything was, like, right, grossed out to the, yep, max.
Nope.
Obscene comedy became, like, I don't know, the norm. Mm-hmm. Family Guy.
Yeah, that's true. It all happened. It all started at once. Like, you saw, I think, really, it probably started with Saturday Night Live, where they would have, like, a hose coming up somebody's sleeve through their costume that would project the puke out. And that's still how they do it, as far as I know, but just to get that projectile spray. But so you see that a few times on TV, and then all of a sudden it's in all these movies, and it's just like this new gag that goes around. No, yeah, it's suddenly it passes the censors. Like, suddenly all the censors are allowing this.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live probably is like a, I don't know, some kind of breeding ground for the culture manipulators of the comedy movies and stuff. Cause yeah, Will Ferrell was like on the tip of the spear of those kind of, movies with the gross, jokes and stuff. The gags.
Yeah, I think there was a turning point somewhere, like you said, the early 2000s, late 90s. Where most comedy movies just became one long, like, poop joke. Or just a series of poop jokes and, you know, shit like that. Where it's just the lowest of the lowbrow. But, and then it's like, alternative. There's not much else out there. As far as the major studio releases are going.
Yeah, there's really not. Yeah, it kind of just seems like a debasement kind of thing, like almost an Idiocracy, you know, laughing at projectile vomit. It's absurd.
Don't you know it's the Jews, man? It's the Jews. They want to do this to us. That was a joke. I think you know that, but just for the audience, I was joking there when I said that.
It's too late. You're an anti-Semite now.
Got the ADL vans outside my house already. Yeah, isn't it funny that, like, how the main people who will critique this kind of trend we're talking about, most of the people who are out there critiquing that kind of take that line, like, it's the Jews in Hollywood. It's, you know, the agenda to destroy the white race, or this and that, and whatever. There's not many other voices out there providing a different angle, perhaps. Maybe I'm being naive. Am I being naive?
Yeah, no, I think you would be naive to assume it's the heads of the
of the studios or whatever, you know, like, sure, the Hollywood predominantly Jewish or more more Jewish than other industries, but yeah, I don't think they're the bosses of it, or at least of where the agenda is directed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been said many times on this particular channel that, yeah, you have various groups, and there are groups put out there to take the blame for certain things, and we can't, it's hard for us here from our little positions to really say who's behind such and such an agenda. But it sure makes for good, what would you call it, like talking points or cliques, controlled opposition, divide and conquer to get people segregated into little groups who like to blame this or that other group for all their everything they hate. Sure works good for that.
Yeah, if you can pit the groups against each other, then you know, you don't have to worry about them really making any advances towards you. I'm asking the wrong questions. But yeah, I don't know who they are. I wish I did. It'd be cool.
Well, it's the... Can we go down the list? Do you have the list of groups? How many groups can we blame? Or how many groups have we been told to blame? Reptilians, the Committee of 300, the Rothschilds, the Roundtable Groups, the Bilderbergs, the Illuminati, the Jesuits, the Satanists, the Nazis, the Jews, the aliens. I must be forgetting some.
I think you might have you must have the list right in front of you. Is that the official list?
It's the semi-official. Let me just check my fax machine. I've got something coming through the wire right now. Apparently there's a new group. Oh, yes, the Crowleyites, the Theosophists, Blavatskyites, Rosicrucians.
Ooh, there we go.
Freemasons, obviously. So now we're up to about 15.
The Anglo-American establishment?
Yep, that's 16. And then if you're part of the black conscious community, it's all white Europeans. So anything white is evil.
Well, and they got the Boule, too. That's like the black Illuminati.
Uh-huh. Jay-Z, is he the head of that?
I think it's Oprah.
Of course, yeah, Oprah. So, yeah, that sounds like there's anywhere from 16 to maybe 25 groups that we could blame for all this. So it's kind of like, you know, pick your flavor of the day. It's like Baskin-Robbins, 31 flavors of conspiracy. Is it 30?
You gotta,
33.
At least two more, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
the Kabbalist and...
Oh, that's a good one, yeah. That's like a subgroup of the Crowleyites, maybe, or vice versa.
Yeah, it kind of crosses a lot there. Theosophy, Freemasonry. But, yeah, I think I'm about to chill out and see if Chris is going to come on. But
oh, yeah, yep.
I've been gone for a while, so it was nice talking to you, James.
Yeah, cool. You too. Have a good night.
All right, man. Later. I can get this thing to hang up.
Hi, my name is Jan Erik, and I recommend the Fakeologist because that's the place to get real truth and not BS.